Unconfirmed sources say this is the best show in the history of sports radio.
You're simply the best.
This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch.
Better than all the rest.
On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And I'm not prepared. Writer's Block with Blair and Deitch. For Wednesday, November 13th. We don't talk about that here. We don't talk about
that.
Is
that Fight Club?
No.
You've never seen Fight Club?
No.
You don't know the famous line from Fight Club?
No.
First rule of Fight Club, do not talk about Fight Club. You've never seen Brad Pitt?
I know who Brad Pitt is. I've never seen Fight Club.
Right. Pretty famous line. First rule of Fight Club, don't talk about Fight Club. I know Brandeo got it.
If it's famous, how come I haven't heard about it?
I would think Travis knows it too.
Anyhow. Well, it's all downhill from there, isn't it?
Yeah, you can rebound.
The Leafs get back on the ice tonight against the Islanders. Nobody's making a big deal about this, I don't think, in Long Island, are they? Tavares return, compared to the first one. I mean, I guess the biggest deal is that Zach Hyman is, is returning to the lineup.
You think people in Long Island are making a big deal?
People in Long Island don't give a rat's ass about that.
No, I mean, it's certainly, that's a big story for here. But no, I think it's the third time Tavares has...
Just a minute. I'm just removing the Kleenex box.
I think it's the third time he's been back in the island. Somebody can fact check me if it's the second, but I think it's the third. And usually by the third time, Jeff, that storyline in terms of returning to his old club is really, really mitigated. He'll certainly get booed. Somebody will check for us. He'll get booed. It won't be a fun night for John, but it won't be anything like the first time. And this will be... This is a pretty interesting hockey game, Jeff, just in the sense that the Islanders have played really, really well. They, as we talked yesterday about this, Lamoriello and Trotz have done a great job in a relatively short amount of time to turn that program around. They have what I think the Leafs envy, and that is a backup goalie who's an absolute 1A. And they're playing really, really good hockey. You know, as I think it was Elliot who talked about this, that the strength of the Islanders right now is they do give up a lot of shots, but they don't give up a lot of high scoring chances.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see not only what kind of pressure the Leafs put on the Islanders goalie, but what kind of chances they get. I also think, Jeff, this is a absolutely perfect kind of night to maybe insert Tyson Barrie into power play one to try to get him going. So it's a pretty interesting November game to me.
I'll give you a rundown of what we have coming up in the show. Rick Barnes will join us at 2:25. He is the head men's basketball coach with the University of Tennessee Volunteers. There's a tournament in town coming up, and the Tennessee Volunteers, a U.S. college tournament. The Tennessee Volunteers are one of the teams. And Rick Barnes, this has been fertile territory for Rick Barnes in the past. When he was at the University of Texas, he, of course, had Tristan Thompson, Corey Joseph, Mike Kabongo. He has brought in, I believe, since being at Tennessee since 2015, I believe he has brought in two Canadians as well. I'm not certain he has any Canadians on his roster right now, but this was a guy that certainly had a firsthand look at sort of the explosion of basketball talent in Canada. So he'll join us at 2:25. Gord Stellick and Paul Jones in the 3 o'clock hour. 4 o'clock, Butch Goring. 4:25, David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, the podcast, MLB analyst for CBS Sports HQ. He'll be along. I am ecstatic to have David Sampson on at a time when we can talk about how the Houston Astros are cheating.
Should be interesting.
This is, I've decided, baseball's Deflategate.
We'll see. I mean, it's pretty early.
Damage is done. It doesn't matter what Major League Baseball finds out. everyone will believe the Astros cheated from this point on. That's the way it works.
Yeah, I mean, I think the majority of baseball fans will. I think what remains to be seen is what other layers and tentacles come with the story. Will other former Astros come out and confirm what Mike Fiers said? But yeah, I mean, I think everything's a little bit smaller because it's the NFL and Spygate was massive. But I do think, Jeff, that teams and fans are going to look at the Astros differently. And you definitely will look at this dynastic era differently, for sure.
I want to talk about Colin Kaepernick as well. This story broke yesterday. The NFL has set up a workout for Colin Kaepernick Saturday in Atlanta. And essentially, they're inviting teams to send representatives. Interesting. I normally don't pay attention to anything Stephen A. Smith says.
Generally wise.
Yeah, generally wise.
Sometimes he'll come through.
But Stephen A. Smith suggested today that Jay-Z may be behind this decision. Of course, Jay-Z is a former partnership with the NFL and works with them in a formal capacity. You know, this seems to me, and it's interesting reading on Twitter some of the comments from NFL sources. And one of the things you're getting from a lot of the national commentators is that a lot of NFL teams are actually going to take this seriously. They're happy about this because the fact that they're all getting together, or the fact that the workout has been organized for them, means that they can say to their fans or whomever would be upset about this, no, we didn't approach him. We were invited to come to this. The thing that surprises me, though, if that's the case, is why didn't Colin Kaepernick's people set this up?
Well, a couple things. One, and again, Stephen A. Smith sometimes certainly is very connected and wired.
And this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, he's connected to Jay-Z, but keep in mind that Jay-Z and the Kaepernick camp had a significant falling out when Jay-Z became a partner with the NFL.
But this might be a way for Jay-Z to regain some cred.
Don't know enough about it, but certainly could be some truth there.
Right.
Secondly, there are some stories out there, Jeff, including Charles Robinson of Yahoo, who said that the setup for this, or the potential setup for this, is a little notable in that the workout would be on a Saturday, where a lot of teams are really in the middle of game planning. Seems like they gave the Kaepernick camp not a lot of time to agree to this workout. Workout closed to the media, so we don't really know who's going to be there and how many teams will take this seriously. I think the one thing, and I'm not saying the Kaepernick camp has not sort of public relations-wise made some mistakes, because they certainly have, but it is inconceivable, and it has been inconceivable for 3 years, that Colin Kaepernick is not one of the 60 best quarterbacks alive. It's just, you can't defend that on merit. I'm not saying he should be starting for the Green Bay Packers, but he certainly is good enough, or has been good enough, to be a backup in the NFL. Where he is 3 years later, I don't know. And Jeff, I'll pose this to you. Do you think there is an organization out there, if they believe that Colin Kaepernick can help them in terms of on the field, and I think he probably could help a lot of teams on the field, at least in a backup position, are they willing to sign him and take whatever that comes? Some negative backlash from their own fan base, certainly some national negative backlash, a lot of attention, at least in the initial signing. I personally am one who thinks it would go away pretty quick. But
I agree.
You're going to have an owner who is not one of these traditional, oh boy, owners who does not want to get the ire of the president of the United States, who's more conservative than not. Well, and I the NFL, as you know, Jeff, you've followed this league for a long time. It is, generally speaking, a conservative league that does not do outside-the-box stuff. I just wonder if there's an owner out there.
Well, here's the thing I would ask you. Which team currently has the type of quarterback crisis that could be resolved by bringing in Colin Kaepernick?
I think the Panthers have a need for a backup, and that owner is pretty progressive. That's one.
Okay.
I think there are... I'd have to get the list in front of me of all the backup quarterbacks in the NFL, but like, it strikes me that Colin Kaepernick would be better than the Bills' backup right now. I mean, I could probably go down the list. He's not going to start anywhere.
Here's the thing. He hasn't played for 3 years.
Correct.
What makes you think he's better than a backup that's already on somebody's roster? Like, to me, the only way Colin Kaepernick gets a shot is if there's a team with a legit quarterback crisis.
Right. So, like,
make the case to me that he's better that after being out of the game for 3 years, or I guess it's technically two and a half years,
right.
That he...
But his resume, Jeff, is better.
It's got a great resume.
It's better than almost every backup quarterback in the NFL.
He hasn't played for 2.5 years.
He hasn't played because he's been blackballed by the league.
Jose Bautista's got a great resume. He hasn't played for 2 years. You're going to bring him in to hit home runs?
We're talking about a guy that was 31. He's not 38.
He's 31.
For a quarterback, that's not old anymore.
For a quarterback who hasn't played for 2.5 years, that's freaking old.
Again, the rust in him is going to be obvious. He hasn't played. He hasn't been in an NFL camp. He would not know what the playbook or game plan of a certain organization is.
What are we in? How many more weeks left in the NFL season?
6 or 7.
Yeah. I'm partially playing devil's advocate.
No, I get it.
But I'm trying to look at it from a logical point of view. You know, the idea that it's on a Saturday, teams are preparing on Sundays. Teams are going to send their scouting directors out. They're not. The head coach isn't going to come out anyhow. So whether they hold it Sunday afternoon, Saturday morning, Saturday, it doesn't make any difference. You're going to get video of this guy. Your scouting director is going to be there. That logistical concern, it just doesn't matter. The timing, the surprise of it, yeah, that certainly would raise suspicions. But I also wonder if there's also a realization amongst NFL people that you can do this now because a guy like me who's a bleeding heart and who would love Colin Kaepernick to shove it up everybody's you know what.
Right. I get it. Well, exactly.
Even me, and you know, person doesn't worship the altar of the NFL, all that stuff. If an NFL coach says to me, you know what, he would be of no use to us this year, I'd look and go, you're probably right.
Let me make my counter devil's advocate argument. Okay, let's say that he is. Let's play it out and say, okay, he is not sharp enough, or the rust is too much for him to come in and play this year. Are you telling me that on a very cheap minimum like contract, you wouldn't bring that guy in?
I'd rather put him
on your reserve staff and then have him ready for next year.
I'd rather have a young guy. I'd rather take that and have a young guy.
If you don't have to play him, let's say, if I'm going to play your argument, and you don't have to necessarily play him in a game, but you put him in your program, let him get as much practice and as many reps as he can get, and you set him up for 2020. That's getting a guy who was at one time a Pro Bowl quarterback.
Two and a half years ago. How many years ago was he a Pro Bowl quarterback?
Probably four years ago.
So 4 years removed from being a Pro Bowl
31.
Quarterback.
Johnny Manziel got another chance. I mean, all these quarterbacks get other chances with
Johnny Manziel got one more other chance.
But these quarterbacks get other chances.
He has not received any chance in the NFL, has he? Johnny Manziel?
No,
how many NFL
bad,
chances?
A, no, he's a bad example.
No, right.
You know what I'm saying, Jeff.
But I don't.
Look at the Bills' backup quarterbacks over the last 10 years. It's a collection of like.
How do you know that?
Carnival bark.
How do you know that a guy who's been out of the game for 2.5 years is going to be better? Like, you can't possibly say that.
I don't know. I concede. I have no idea what Colin Kaepernick will be.
And I got to tell you, at this point of the year, how many reps does a third string quarterback get in practice?
You'd probably run the scout team. Yeah, you'd be running the scout team.
Well, that's. You're not running your offense. You're running the scout team.
It is hard for me to swallow that his talent wouldn't be enough where you'd bring him in to a camp to at least get a legit long look at him. In baseball, they sign guys who hit 95 at a carnival basically, and sign these guys to minor league contracts. It's the same sort of.
Yeah, but there's
notion.
No such thing as minor league contracts in the NFL. The difference
I get
is
it,
you,
but,
the
but
difference
a taxi
is,
squad is essentially a minor.
No, but the difference is in baseball, you've got to fill 4 or 5 minor league franchises. So you can do that. I hope he puts on a great show. But I think this sort of conventional wisdom that he's better than 30 of the quarterbacks, 30 backup quarterbacks in the NFL right now is probably wrong.
Well, because they blackballed him and he hasn't played.
But it's an easy out for the league.
I understand. You can't undo the fact that he was blackballed.
I'm agreeing with you, but you can't undo that fact.
I can't counter your argument because the likelihood is if you put him on a field, a controlled workout where all he's doing is throwing to a guy, who knows how he's going to look? Totally could be right. Here's the other thing, too. I'm the first person to admit this. He could look like Tom Brady, and that might not be legit because he's not – no rush, not playing against anybody. So I don't know. I don't know how that's going to – I don't know how that's going to play out, but I do think the NFL gets a ton of PR, Jeff.
Oh, without question.
If he actually gets to a field and works out, it's a huge PR victory for the NFL. Because then
this is a PR victory.
Yeah. If it gets to the point where he works out and there are some teams that look at him, the NFL is going to be like, hey, we set this up. These teams looked at him. They didn't think he was that good. How can you kill us?
And if they do that, the NFL can present to its fans one argument and to its media one argument that you can't counteract, and that's right. We don't think he's that good.
Exactly. That's an issue.
You can't argue against that. This is the James Naismith Classic.
This is a pretty good game.
This is going to be fun. Harvard and Buffalo, Tennessee and Washington, Rutgers and St. Bonaventure. This is the James Naismith Classic Saturday.
Washington's got a couple of NBA prospects.
Yes. Saturday at Scotiabank Arena. Rick Barnes will be joining us.
Anyway,
I hope it works out, Richard.
I hope it happens, and then we can make some assessments after it happens. Maybe some people who are there will, offer some kind of analysis as to where he is. The only thing I'll say, Jeff, and sort of like my conclusion on Colin Kaepernick, and I think you make a total fair point. I'm with you. I have stake in the game. I would like to see him sign. I think he got totally screwed, but it's hard to counter. He's been gone for 2.5 years. I don't think, Jeff, in my humble, honest, objective opinion, I don't think there was any argument the year he was out that he was absolutely
no
good
argument
enough
at all
to be a backup.
Absolutely. Good to start for a couple of teams.
That's what's frustrating, that guy was one of the, at that time, 60 best people in the world to play quarterback.
Right, but that's not the case now.
We'll see. 2 years ago. 2 years removed, it's a long time.
It is a long time.
And the game has changed. But Colin Kaepernick was in the league. Lamar Jackson wasn't. The world has changed, and I give you that.
Rick Barnes is head coach of the University of Tennessee Volunteers men's basketball team. His team will be one of six taking part at the James Naismith Classic this Saturday at Scotiabank Arena, U.S. men's college basketball. While he was at Texas, coached Corey Joseph, Tristan Thompson, and Mike Kabongo. Rick Barnes will join us. He knows a lot about recruiting basketball talent in Canada. He'll join us next. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Your construction smells of corruption. I manipulate to recreate this air to ground saga. Got a launder. I said hallelujah to the 16th loyal fans. You're getting down on your knees.
Thanks for just dancing.
I like that. This is
low fidelity all stars.
Yeah, this to me.
That's what the radio folks are hearing.
For the TV folks, people
are probably
this could be bumper music literally every day.
Wondering why Dice was dancing.
I'll tell you. Bumper music has changed for me in the last 6 months on this station.
Hi. Why?
Just different taste. Different musical taste.
Okay. Just wanted
different
to check.
Different shows
at. Just wanted to check.
I think I told you, Blair, long before I worked with you, that I always loved your musical bumpers.
Derek Brandale.
No, and I thought you had the best at the station. Although, obviously, my man Dylan too, who works here, is great. I always thought you had the. I think maybe even before I worked. Yeah, I think even before I worked at Sportsnet, I always thought you had the best bumpers, because you would mix.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'm saying you would mix like punk, alt.
I work in my bumpers.
Some modern stuff. It was good.
You should see me in the health club working on my bumpers, man.
Do you, when you are working out at all, do you listen to a certain style or genre of music?
I just try to listen for my heart beating. As long as my heart's beating, it's okay. Once it stops, I get worried. No, I listen to podcasts.
You're listening for the paramedics.
I listen to podcasts. I listen to soccer podcasts. Every now and then I'll toss Spotify on, but mostly I listen to podcasts.
All right, I like it. All right, anyway. Great job on the bumpers. Keep it up.
Travis, do we have Rick Barnes yet?
Can only fill for so long, Travis.
Technical difficulty. We'll have him in a second.
All right.
Do you technical have Kevin Grant? That's backup.
Gord Stellick will join us at 3 o'clock. Paul Jones at 3:25. The Raptors taking on.
I'm looking forward to this.
Trailblazers tonight. You're basically treating every Raptors game this year, Dyche, like it's game seven.
No, I'm not going to treat the Mavericks every game. I'm not treating the Mavericks game like
that. You know what I want to hear you say someday? I want to hear you say, yeah, I don't think I'm going to watch the Raptors game tonight. There's not much in it.
Jeff, when the Raptors play the Atlanta Hawks, I'm going to be like, Jeff, there's not much in this game. I'm not watching.
No, you're going to be saying I can't.
No, I'm not. But, Jeff, you yourself have said that you like
I like watching Damian Lillard. He's my favorite player in the NBA.
Hassan Whiteside is there.
They might be my favorite team in the NBA.
They're interestingly enough, they're 4-6. They're not really rolling right now.
I watched them play Sacramento last night.
Something's off with them?
Well, they're a two-man team right now.
I thought Whiteside actually a pretty good addition. I'm surprised. So.
Anyhow. Of course, Alec Paul Jones, you mentioned. Butch Goring, the Islanders TV analyst, will join us at 4 o'clock. The Leafs and the Islanders tonight, Wednesday night hockey. It's our Wednesday night hockey presentation, 6:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. And American Friedman will be doing the duties on the panel. Our next Raptors telecast and broadcast will be Monday from Scotiabank Arena. The Charlotte Hornets taking on the Raptors. The Raptors, as we mentioned, play Portland tonight. They play Dallas on Friday, and then they are back home.
All right, I'm not looking to the Charlotte. I'm not really psyched for the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, I am.
You are?
No.
I might go to that, though, just because they're back home. I'd like to sort of watch them post a homestand, post road trip.
I guess we're waiting. I have not seen whether or not there's any update on Norman Powell. There was, he won't be playing for a while. He has an eye contusion. But I believe it was our friend Eric Carina of The Athletic who reported that Norman Powell may have banged up his knee. The Raptors have activated O'Shea Brissett. So I have not seen anything further in that. Perhaps we will have an update at some point.
Jeez,
we talked about this basketball tournament coming up Saturday at Scotiabank Arena. It is the James Naismith Classic. It is a one-day tournament. 6 Division I college teams. Harvard will take on Buffalo at 2:30 p.m. Tennessee will take on number 20 Washington at 5 p.m. And Rutgers will take on St. Bonaventure at 7:30 p.m. Intriguing matchups for a variety of reasons. First of all, St. Bonaventure and Buffalo probably look at Toronto as being a bit of their catchment area. Same with Rutgers. Tennessee, we mentioned. Washington's has had Canadian players as well. Tennessee, Rick Barnes, who we're hoping will join us in a few minutes, when he coached at Texas, started a pipeline of Canadian players through prep schools in the United States. He had Corey Joseph, Tristan Thompson. You mentioned Mike Kabongo. There were 2 kids that his first year in Tennessee were part of his first recruiting class who are Canadian kids as well. He was one of the big name U.S. college coaches who really figured out early in the process that this was prime recruiting territory. So that's why these tournaments are so interesting and so important for a lot of these teams, because it does allow you to sort of fly the flag in an area that is, you know, I believe it was Rick Barnes, as a matter of fact, himself, who said 6 years ago that basically Toronto's the new New York for recruiting college basketball players.
Well, one of the things that these college coaches do, and I think it's very smart, whether it's Mike Krzyzewski on the men's side, Gino Auriemma on the women's side, is if you can get a prominent player, Jeff, to play at your program, even Calipari, you know, the Kentuckys, I'm talking about the A-level program.
Right.
What the players do, let's say like in Kia Nurse's case, come back to Canada, come back to her area in Toronto, and whoever that best player is or a potential Division I kind of star player, I feel like you have a leg up, because the player who's younger than that star player who's now in that college, generally speaking, they may want to emulate that path. They'll have knowledge of that school. So the schools that have gotten into Canada, and particularly the sort of the GTA, who've gotten a little bit of a foothold, I think you can, you know, I mean, an RJ Barrett type, Jeff, can change your program.
Well, and here's the thing. A lot of these kids from Toronto go down to U.S.
Right,
prep
so
programs. So you see them there. But the point is, if you could see them earlier, even though you may not make direct contact. I mean, there's always a way to make contact with somebody. It's not like NCAA teams necessarily adhere to all the rules. But the idea that you can perhaps make early initial contact and give yourself a leg up, yeah, in the pursuit of that player.
I was just saying, if you're a 14-year-old boy or girl and you watch, let's say, UConn and you saw Kia Nurse or Notre Dame and you saw Nnamdi Achamwa play, I think that gives those schools a leg up on that prospect right. in Canada, because there isn't 75 Canadian stars for that player to watch. There's only still a limited number. So the schools that have gotten in a little bit early, I think, are really, really smart. And this is a really... All these college coaches are smart to be in this tournament,
yes.
Jeff, because now every kid who's interested in basketball is going to be at Scotiabank that day to check out what's going on.
The other aspect of this as well, from the coaching and recruiting point of view, is you only have a certain number of scholarships if you're an NCAA team,
right?
You gotta. As good as Toronto may be for recruiting area, you got to be reasonably certain before you commit to a kid, before you give one of those scholarships to a kid. And I think that's why you see a lot of kids go down to U.S. Prep school.
It's got to be somebody who's really, really good.
Right.
You know, if it's going to be like the ninth player in your rotation and it's between a kid who's maybe closer to you than the GTA, right. the American kid's probably going to get that scholarship. But when you have a shot at an R.J. Barrett type, that's a game-changing player. You know, I'll be really interested to see the next wave of Canadian kids who are like 15, 16 right now, 14, and what schools they choose heading forward. If they follow some of the stars that have made it to the NBA, Kentucky, Duke, or if maybe they forge their own path and create their own legacy at some other Division I
school. Right. We're very pleased to be joined right now by Rick Barnes, head men's basketball coach with the University of Tennessee Volunteers. Coach, thank you so much for joining Richard Deitch and myself today. We greatly appreciate it.
Good to be with you guys. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, you very early on, when you were at Texas, kind of glommed onto the idea of recruiting Canadian kids. How did that come about? What sort of sparked your interest in it?
Well, you know, from the beginning, as I got really into recruiting at all different areas and being all over the country, you know, while I was at Providence, we really started making an emphasis on recruiting internationally any way that we could. And I actually fell in love with recruiting, you know, different kids from outside the United States. And I've had a staff of guys who have been well connected and been able to do that. And I can tell you one thing when I think of the guys that we've coached from Canada, and I've told people this many times, I don't know what it is that's in the water up there, but every one of those Canadian guys that I've coached, they've had a tremendous work ethic. They have really, they really want to do the right thing, to be part of a great program and be great teammates. But the best part really is just the fact that they just work so hard and all come from really good families.
Rick, do you think stylistically there is a Canadian basketball archetype? And if there is, what is the style of a Canadian basketball player?
Well, I can tell you this, of all the Canadian players that I've coached, they've had terrific basketball IQs, all of them. And like I said, I don't know how to answer it other than that from my point of view, whether you're talking, you know, the latest one, Kyle Alexander, Tristan Thompson, Corey Joseph, Mike Kabongo, those guys, they love being in the gym. They just had a tremendous desire to get better, but they all really did understand the game. I mean, they really are some of the best players I've coached in terms of quickly picking up the schemes that you're trying to run.
Now, Coach, tournaments like this, when you go outside the country, how important are they to, in terms of sort of, I'm going to use the phrase, flying the flag, when it comes to your school, when it comes to potential recruiting?
Well, you know, not only do I think it's important for us recruiting for our basketball program, I think it's important for our university, because, you know, we want to be as diverse a university as there is in the country. And, you know, when we can go to different places and expose the University of Tennessee, it's great for all of us. And, you know, we have a great leadership here from our chancellor, our president of our systems, all the way down to where they really want the University of Tennessee worldwide represented. And so it not only does it help us in basketball, but it also helps us in other areas.
Rick, you are playing Washington in Toronto at Scotiabank. That is at the moment a top 20 team. But beyond that, if you look at some of the 2020 NBA draft mock drafts and rankings, I have two guys who potentially could be lottery picks. This looks to be a challenging matchup for you. What do you know about Washington, and what do you have to do?
Well, what I know about Washington is when I was at Providence College in the late 80s, early 90s, I had a chance to take a Big East All-Star team to Australia for 16 days. And Mike Hopkins was on that team. He represented the Syracuse University at that time and went on that trip. And I fell in love with Mike. And I got so much respect for him. I know that he was a coach in waiting at Syracuse, but he's gone to Washington. He has done a terrific job. We know he's going to play the 2-3 zone that he was such a big part of as a player and as a coach now with his own team. But he will mix in some of the man stuff, which he showed the other night. And you talk about it, he's done a great job recruiting two terrific players. And it is going to be a challenge for our guys. I mean, there's no doubt we've got a group of older guys who played really well for us last night, but our younger players are still searching to find their way, and we need them. We need them all to do that. But, you know, I think coming up this time of year, we think the quickest and best way to get young guys to grow up or to start the growth process is stress them and put them in as tough a situation as we possibly can early in the year. We played a really good Murray State team here last night that had gone to the first round of the tournament, and they found out last night early, especially in the first half of that game, that everybody can play because we were down 9 at halftime. And we think that we've always tried to play a hard schedule. We don't ever want to be sitting there in March if we've got a chance to be in the NCAA tournament for that committee to say that our non-league schedule wasn't good enough. And so Washington is going to give us a great challenge. I mean, like I said, Mike's done a terrific job, and I'm impressed with his players. He's done a terrific job. And for us to have a chance to come up there and represent the Naismith Classic, too, is really something we're proud of.
In conversation with Rick Barnes, head coach of the University of Tennessee Volunteers men's basketball team. How has recruiting changed, Rick, over the years, not just in terms of recruiting internationally, but just recruiting in general? Is it more difficult now? There's more video, there's more social media, things like that. Do you sort of stick to the same principles, or do you almost have to go about doing stuff differently?
Well, it's different. You know, I've been doing this for over 40 years, and when I first broke into it, my first couple of years, you know, there was no limits on how many days a year you could recruit. So you literally could go out every day of the year. And back then you could somewhat outwork people in terms of just being there all the time. But then as time has changed, where we have our recruiting, you know, periods, and when now you have to go. If you don't want to go, you still have to go. But is it different? I don't know if it's so much different. There's obviously a lot more attention that's brought to the recruiting. It's almost like it's another huge part of, you know, the social media that goes into what we do. But I think there's enough players out there for everybody, and I think the key to recruiting is that you have a staff of coaches that work with you that understand the kind of players that you want to coach, the kind of players that you want to bring into your program, the kind of players you want to represent your university. And because I've had teams that were very talented that weren't very good teams. I've had some other teams that were okay talent but were terrific teams. And, you know, we had a group of guys here the last couple of years that were not highly rated. You know, Grant Williams was a 3-star player. Schofield was a 3-star player. Kyle Alexander was a 2- or 3-star player, how you look at it. And we've never put any emphasis on that. I have a staff that we're going to go out and evaluate ourselves who we think can fit in with us. And I would think that most people do that. You know, we're fortunate. You know, this year we're having a terrific recruiting year with some really good guys we're excited about that we expect them all be signed up by today. And so, but has it changed? The attention that's brought to it year round has changed, and the social media and all that, but still, I do know this, there's enough players out there for everybody. You don't have to be a 5-star recruit to make it the way I think people think you have to.
Yeah, I love that Grant Williams kid. Should run for president one day when he's done with basketball. One thing I want to ask you, Rick, because we have you on, is you coached Kevin Durant when he was a college player at Texas. And you have obviously seen what has happened to him in his NBA career. He's one of the greatest players of all time, certainly surefire Hall of Famer. You obviously, when you had him in Texas, you knew he was good. As a freshman, do you get any kind of sense that you're coaching and not just a great player, but maybe an all-time player?
Well, this is a true story. I'm sure you guys are familiar with Fran Fraschilla.
Mm-hmm.
Fran was my assistant at Providence College for a couple of years, and we had known each other prior to that. And he actually replaced me at Ohio State when I left Ohio State to become the head coach at George Mason. And when we signed Kevin Durant, and we were had been in practice, and he was calling around to, you know, starting to get a feel for all the Big 12 teams. And he said to me, he said, "Well, what do you think about your team?" And I said, exact quote, "I'm not sure how good we're going to be. I can only tell you this, that we have the best player in the country." And he said, "You mean you've got the best freshman?" I said, "No, we've got the best player in the country."
Hmm.
And he went on, and I actually said to him, he will become one of the top 5-10 players all time to play this game.
Hmm.
Because being around him, the hype, he was never into the hype. He's not into it now. He's as hard a working player as we've ever coached. He understands what it means to be a great teammate. And he loves being in the gym. He's always about getting better. And his teammates loved him. Everybody loved him. But I knew. I mean, he did some – I watched him do some things. I'm like, I marveled at him. One time he took a shot, falling out of bounds. And he literally shot it over the corner of the backboard. This is his very first exhibition game. And where I was standing, it looked like he was out of bounds. Instead of trying to pass it back in, he really did shoot it over the backboard and almost made the shot. And I took him out of the game, and I said to him, "KD, explain to me why you would take that shot." And he said, without hesitation, he said, "Coach, I thought I could make it." And as time went on, I watched him make some of those shots. But there was times, too, that we had him that his teammates would say during timeout, "Come on, man, you got to take this game over." Because he never, ever wanted to act like he was the man. It was so important that his teammates felt like they were a big part of it. But we played him so many. I mean, I think he ended up playing 36 minutes, you know, as a freshman. And he was the first freshman to win all the National Player of the Year awards. But real quickly, to answer your question, we knew we had something really special.
Hey, Coach, listen, we know that it's a busy day for you. It is the initial signing date, the early period for Division I basketball today. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a safe trip to Toronto, and best of luck this season. It was great talking to you.
All right. Thanks, guys, and thanks for having me.
Take care. That's Rick Barnes, head coach of the University of Texas men's basketball team, and it is today's the deadline for initial signing period for men's basketball. So Rick Barnes is going to be a busy man today.
It's pretty nice, though. You should basically imagine Rick Barnes seeing Kevin Durant as a freshman going, "Oh my
imagine
God,
that.
I think we're going to have a good year."
Yeah, Kyle Alexander, who I believe was on the Miami, Heat Summer League roster, is from Milton, Ontario.
Yeah.
He was with Tennessee last year. I have not seen Tennessee's commitment list, so I have no idea if they've got any Canadian kids coming up. So again, the tournament is the James Naismith Classic Saturday at Scotiabank Arena. It is a one-day event. Harvard takes on Buffalo at 2:30 p.m. That's your alma mater, dude.
Yes, it is.
You're not going down?
No, there's a reason why I'm not going down. Oh, yeah, I have, again, child care duties. I'd like to see them, though. I wish I could see them live because they have grown into a really, really good program.
They're a good sports program in general.
They beat, 2 years ago, upset Arizona, which was a very high seed in the NCAA tournament.
Can you sing the Buffalo school song?
Couldn't even tell you what it is, honestly. Sorry. Hopefully somebody can text us.
Can you sing the Columbia song?
No, couldn't tell you that one either.
See, this disturbs me, but we had Kevin Barker on Baseball Central, and he claimed he couldn't sing the Virginia. We played the Virginia Tech song for him.
Well, I feel like that's worse.
He didn't know.
Because Barker probably would have had that played when he was playing baseball.
Well, but
it's not like they played it for me when I was walking in a chem class.
I said to him, you went to games, football games on the weekend, didn't hear you? Nah, I was doing stuff.
Jeff, when I was at Buffalo, nobody should be going to football games.
Anyhow,
it was
Tennessee
a bad program.
This will be a good matchup, the 5 o'clock matchup. Tennessee, they're 2-0. Washington, as Mr. Deitch said, the 20th ranked Washington Huskies. They're 2-0. Rutgers is 2-0. They'll take on St. Bonaventure 0-3. And
cool to see two Western New York schools.
Yes.
Here. It's awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun tournament. I don't know if any of you have ever had a chance to go to see games in Niagara or St. Bonaventure or Buffalo.
Olean is a cool little town. I love to go in there.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun indeed. Mr. Deitch and myself will step away. We'll come back. We'll have more writer's block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And TV-wise, on Sportsnet 360.
Now, more writer's block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block. What do we have coming up?
Gord Stellick.
Paul Jones, Butch Goring, Islanders TV analyst, David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, the podcast and MLB analyst for CBS Sports HQ. Lots of talk at the general manager's meetings about the Athletic story yesterday regarding cheating by the Houston Astros, which, as you said, is the... Did you say that was the most read...
I probably shouldn't have said that internally, but yeah, it's one of the one of the most read stories in the Athletics history.
It's a great story.
But what I haven't seen, Jeff, and maybe you have seen it, have the Astros as an organization or individual management people, made any further statements since yesterday?
Just a very general sort of, we follow the rules.
Oh, so that's sort of a denial.
We follow the rules. No, it's not a denial. It's we follow the rules.
Well, what does that mean? Doesn't that counter that we cheat? Isn't that a denial of cheating? Or no?
I think it may have actually said we try to follow the
rules. We try. There's a key word there. Try.
Let me see.
Not a good week. Not a good month for Luna, or 2 months for
Luna. No. And as I said, I think it's put a... And I truly do believe this. It's put a pall over that organization, over the legacy of the organization. Oh yeah, they are. Yeah. Here it is, Jeff Luno. We try and follow the rules.
Oh, so there you go. We try and follow the rules. Yeah, give me a break.
He's a friend of the show, by the way. So I feel like I should rise in defense of him because he has been on Baseball Central. I should. Yeah, because he's a friend of the show.
Well, just because he's a friend of the show doesn't mean that he's not, that the Astros are not guilty.
Yeah, but that's fine. I don't care if he's guilty. He's a friend of the show.
That's a little Trumpish defense.
No, it's not. It's not at all. It's not at all. You treat people who are good to you, get treated well.
I mean,
Jeff Luno, Rick
generally,
Hine,
but
to
you
my guys,
you got
to
be honest,
general
though.
Managers, I mean, to my boys.
If the Astros committed the crime, don't do the crime. What's the Beretta line? Don't do the time if you can't do the crime. I've screwed that up. Don't do the crime.
Don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Yeah, I'm really dating myself there.
Yeah, it was very George Bush of you, as Derek Brandeo said.
It's very which one? Which Bush?
Don't feel bad. H or W? Don't feel bad.
I have to be honest. I think I speak for the majority in that.
You're anti-Astro. You've been anti-Astro going back to birth.
I don't mind seeing bad things happen to the Astros at all.
Oh, that's not nice.
They had a guy who tried to destroy a colleague of mine. And by extension, a colleague of yours. So
not a colleague of mine.
The larger baseball press, Stephanie Abstein, would be a colleague of yours. No? Any larger? No, all right, whatever. Anyway.
You know, I'm just...
You're just screwing me. Gord Stellick coming up. I like Gord Stellick. Co-host of Leafs Nation. Pre and post game.
Who don't you like here?
At this
present
station?
Company excluded. Who don't you like here?
Yeah, it's the behind the list. Everybody's been really, really nice to me. The people...
There's some quality filling, by the way, because I just...
Yeah, I know. You know, those who have a reputation of backstabbing the station, I don't think it backstabbed me.
Oh, there's plenty of time. I wouldn't worry about it.
I'm not doubting it could happen down the road.
Oh, it will.
But I don't think...
Less
really...
likely now than it used to be.
But... Yeah, I can't really think of anybody who I really... Not that I would say it on the air, but to be very honest, I don't think there's anybody I really dislike.
I'm sorry.
I come in and out, you know? So it's not like... I'm not here at the station enough, I think, to...
You're just...
To have dislike. The other thing, too, is I don't want to be like... You know, an A chair or have my name on a marquee. I like being a co-host, so I don't think I'm threatening.
Well, you're in the right business to not have your name on a marquee.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm so threatening to people. So
I'm just going to let you dig the hole deeper
and deeper. I don't think I'm really...
Want a shovel?
Going to be hated. I feel like I'm fine. Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Travis, what do you think? Derek, okay?
I'm just kidding.
Derek's pulling me off.
Gord Stellick's next. It's Writer's Block with Darren Deitch.
Not afraid to put their name on it. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan 360. This is remarkable stuff that makes. As I get older, the stuff that strikes me as being funny. I can't decide whether my sense of humor is getting more warped as I get older or more refined.
Probably warped.
Probably. Anyhow, Paul Jones will join us. Big rumor out there, Orlando Magic interested in DeMar DeRozan. Jeff Weltman, former assistant GM of Richard Deitch's Toronto Raptors. So that makes a certain amount.
That would be interesting. Yeah, him to the Orlando Magic, and if you didn't have to give up a ton, that's an interesting team.
Yeah, it's a hot rumor. We'll talk to Jonesy about that later on in the hour.
Do you think the Raptors should inquire at all about what the return would be for DeMar?
No.
Okay.
No. A reminder, you can win one of 55. I don't mean that as a no disrespect to DeMar. I just think that no, they've
been there.
They've been there, and they need to do other things too. And I didn't mean that to be a sign of disrespect to DeMar.
I think you make the call just to see.
I'm not sure.
Probably to ask too much, but I would make the call.
You can win one of 50 $500 prize packs and qualify for our grand prize sports weekend getaway, which will include tickets to see both Toronto teams back to back with the VTech wake up call. This contest is open to Ontario residents only. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 for details. Let's bring in Gord Stellick, co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Mr. Stellick, will be doing some work tonight as the Toronto Maple Leafs go to Long Island. You notice how I said that, Long Island, to take on the Islanders at 8 o'clock. Puck drop, and as I mentioned, Leafs Nation post-game with Nick Elberg and Gord Stellick. Right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What is going to interest you the most tonight, Gord, as we talk about the return of Zach Hyman, but also the continuing evolution this team is going to have to go through for a month at least without Mitch Marner?
Well, it's the whole 82-game journey is all about different adjustments and setbacks and finding what works, finding what doesn't work, playing without guys that are injured. Obviously, you're going a whole season and now a number of games without what was your best line last season with Tavares, Hyman, and Marner, but that's the way it goes. I really, Jeff, I saw a Leaf team I loved watching for 50 minutes of the game they lost on Sunday, and I want to see a lot more of that. I know Mike Babcock talked that 3-1 game against the win against Los Angeles is a beautiful game and a wonderful game as we sat bored watching it. And I want to see a mix of those two things. I want to see, okay, that those elements he talks about, taking away shooting opportunities, all those things I understand. But at the end of the day, the guys that can make it a difference and make you an elite team really came out in force without Mitch Marner on Sunday. And I'm hoping to see more of that with, 12 of the next 15 games on the road.
Gord, what do you think is realistic for Zach Hyman tonight in terms of ice time and in terms of performance?
I think we saw with John Tavares when he missed much less number of games, and you were talking about a finger rather than a knee injury, how he took a couple of games to get going. So, I mean, nowadays, though, Richard, they do make, you don't even do those couple of days for the Toronto Marlies you used to do. You used to do a couple of AHL conditioning-type games. So I don't expect much, but, of course, his style, his play, is the kind of thing that it's a lot of it's his try and his give and his work ethic, which are things that don't go away and don't dissipate when you're injured. So I would expect it to be an evolving situation as these road games go on, but I wouldn't expect much tonight.
So not having Mitch Marner creates an opportunity in some ways. I hate to phrase it at that because it makes it sound positive. But those of us who've been wondering when we are going to see the first power play unit rejigged, well, we'll get a chance now with the team essentially being at full strength with the exception of Mitch Marner. How do you see this playing out? Are we going to see more, do you think, of the Tyson Barrie being rolled out in the first unit, or for now at least, is it going to be William Nylander? With the addendum to that the power play looked pretty effective against the Chicago Blackhawks at time as constituted.
Yeah, it really did. It really did. And, William Nylander is the guy that took advantage last year up till December 1st of the absence of William Nylander. So as far as that went, I mean, he's the guy that Kasperi Kapanen did. And that's what Kasperi Kapanen did last year with Nylander gone. And again, with Marner gone, he's kind of that ex-player that signed for what you could argue was less than maybe he could have got on the open market. I mean, he was a restricted free agent. He wasn't an unrestricted free agent. And he's just a handy guy to have around in that stead. So I expect he's going to be the guy who's going to see more ice time and really seize the opportunity like he did last year. It would be a positive. Tyson Berry, I think it's something like one assist in 16 games.
Yeah.
And he had a wide open chance on Sunday as well. I mean, in the bigger picture, when you aren't going great, you don't get breaks. And Michael Hutchinson was a great example of that on Sunday, because that wasn't his worst game in goal. He got like almost no breaks, but he was pretty well done if he didn't win it, at least for the present time. And Tyson Berry had a wide open, the old yawning cage, and couldn't put it in as well to get his first as a Leaf. So I would think, again, because you want to use the 82 games to get things set for the playoffs, that you do want to integrate Tyson Berry maybe a bit more, give him some chances that way to see if he can get it going and give him a chance to excel. But the power play, I thought Sunday, Jeff and Richard, a lot of it was just getting quickly to the offensive zone and using their puck handling wizardry. Too much of the old drop back pass that every team does, basically the slingshot backwards. Teams are starting to defend it to some degree. I know there's a line that the Maple Leafs have X percentage in how they take the offensive zone, but it's just hasn't been relaying into power play goals. So I hope that what we saw getting two power play goals on Sunday has helped snap this funk to a degree.
Gord, you've been a general manager. You've got a player in Tyson Berry that you've traded for. He is eligible for free agency. He will be at the end of the year. This is his walk year. What's a team's obligation to a guy like that when he's scuffling? You know, when he's got one assist, as you're saying, 16 games, obviously you want him to play well so the team can win. But what are the obligations to the player himself, who probably comes off the ice after every shift and says, well, there's another $100 I lost, or there's another $500 I lost?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, Jeff, that it could be different team from team by team. And, you know, some coaches might say, well, look, I got to, you know, and Mike Babcock's a case like that. You know, I got to survive, and I want to put the guys out who I want and when I want. But also looking at that, I don't exactly have the deepest defense core. And I think there's a mutual thing here. There's a commitment to Tyson Berry. He's an NHL defenseman. His skill set just didn't go away. He's acknowledging it's his first time he's moved to another team, and there's an adjustment. When you come to another team, there's also an adjustment to play with Mike Babcock. I think, guys, that Jake Muzzin played okay when he came over from the Los Angeles Kings, but I think he's playing a lot better this year.
Mm-hmm.
He and Morgan Riley are the two best defensemen. So I think we see that a little bit, that it took Muzzin some time. But I think it's more an obligation to the team that you got to get this guy contributing to the team and for the team like you did in Colorado.
Gord, do you have any an explanation or theories as to why the first period slog continues for the Leafs?
Can you not hear Mike Babcock always talking start on time? And everybody says that, and they were doing it for a while. But, you know, Richard, are his pep talks boring? Are they too long? I mean, what? I am baffled, particularly in Chicago. You've got that. I know Chicago's a place that the visiting teams get jacked by virtue of the anthem and how loud it is. And it really is something they better figure out, because although the Boston Bruins didn't finish on time last night to the Florida Panthers, you're seeing teams like, you know, Washington and Boston and the Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues. And I mean, they start on time. If you're digging a hole too often and not getting that first goal like the Leafs are, you're playing a whole different game. You're the chaser rather than being chased, and there's no excuse for it.
Gord, one thing just off the Leafs for a second I want to follow up with. Did you see that Boston-Florida game? That was crazy. The Bruins scored, I think, was it four in the second, and then the Panthers scored four in the third, and then the Panthers won in overtime. I didn't watch it, but looking at the box score, that seemed like a crazy game.
Well, in Boston as well.
Wow.
I mean, how many times do the Bruins blow a 4-0 lead period? They scored four goals, the Bruins did, in the second period in a span of 7 minutes, 16 seconds. So they got them quick. So you thought that would be the four daggers in the Florida Panthers. And they spread theirs out a little bit in the third period. Aaron Ekblad scored early. Keith Yandle scored late. But I'm telling you, I think I always know whenever you look back at the end of the season, there's always about three watershed games each team has. And if they had a season with success, they'll look at three positives. If they had a season that wasn't, they'll look at three negatives. I think the Florida Panthers will look at that game, and that will be the game that decided they made the playoffs this year. So there's one more team in the playoffs in the East this year that's going to be the Florida Panthers, so somebody's going to be out of it. I cannot never believe it'll be the Toronto Maple Leafs, even though they're kind of flirting with it now. But to me, that'll be a defining game for Joel Quenneville and the Florida Panthers. And you know what, Richard? We talk about goaltending so much. They've really done it without Sergei Bobrovsky. He got pulled after 40 minutes, and they put that Samuel Montembeau goal in the third period. So the Florida Panthers are a quiet team that seem to really have it coming together.
I want to bring it back a little bit to the Leafs and the slow start, because, Gord, I'm of the opinion, it's the same thing when a team comes out of spring training slowly. I mean, I'm not afraid to lay the blame for that at the foot of the manager. Just as when a team starts slowly in a hockey game, I'm not afraid to lay the blame for that at the feet of the head coach, because up until the start of the game, you got their attention. Like, you know, there's nothing else they're thinking about. Oh, they're warming up, they're getting ready for the game and everything. But you've got their attention as their head coach up to that point. How do you view it? And again, if you had an answer to the slow start, you'd be a general manager right now. And you know, we'd be talking about the wizardry of Gord Stellick and being general manager of teams that never have slow starts. But that is kind of on the coach, is it not?
I think it's valid. I mean, you get to play in the NHL or wherever, and you always want players to be accountable. But then if they were truly accountable, I guess they could do it themselves. You wouldn't have a coach. I would never say about a coach has lost the room, and I wouldn't certainly get there about Mike Babcock, because he hasn't. But there's a tune-out factor. There really is a tune-out factor. And it's, you know, there's teams that can win and have won without players being really thrilled about their coach, getting a little tired about their coach. But it's year five. These guys are in, you know, big money contracts now. They're not real kids anymore. And to say that is the act wearing thin and things like that, I think that's a valid criticism. And if that's part of how it's playing out with the slow start, I can see it. I can see they don't embrace every word he says. And then you got new assistant coaches again. You know, they're maybe a little tired of it. Let's go out, kick ass, and let's get to the promised land. I mean, he got out-coached by Bruce Cassidy last year in the playoffs as much as any player got outplayed on the Toronto Maple Leafs side.
Right.
So, you know, he's the guy got most at stake this time, Mike Babcock. And we all do, Richard. Everyone's kind of nodding their heads, having kids at home, and knowing after a while, like, things just change.
Kaskasuo, Gord, what do you think is realistic for him in terms of, let's use like the next 2 weeks as a guidepost? What's realistic in terms of how much he'd play and what you expect?
Well, you would think it'd be Saturday in Pittsburgh, not an easy place to play. It looks like they'll be without Sidney Crosby, though. But I don't know how much Mike Babcock really wanted to buy in this load management on Freddie Anderson about missing more games than just the second games of back-to-backs. I don't know. But right now, I think it just will continue to be till he gets a backup goaltender that can win him games that way. So that's when I think we'll see him. And then if he's able to grab this role, and we saw a goaltender in Colorado get a shutout his first ever NHL game. I mean, years ago we saw Garrett Sparks do the same with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So
not that long ago.
Wasn't that long ago at all. And Garrett Sparks now is in the minors with Vegas Golden Knights. And so in the case of Kaskasiu, he's playing well right now. He's got that intangible. He's playing the hottest of his career with the Toronto Marlies. And he's getting that chance. And last year, the ultimate situation is Jordan Binnington in St. Louis. I'm not saying this guy's going to be Jordan Binnington in St. Louis. The Blues are looking just for any goaltender to get him going. But you take a chance with somebody in your organization, and especially when they're playing well. And he's played well so far with the Toronto Marlies. So, I really hoped Michael Hutchinson. I really felt bad for him on Sunday. I really did. But he just has proven he's not an NHL regular backup goaltender right now. And this guy's got a chance to do it. Years ago, decades ago, was Mike Palmatier. Yeah. You know, whatever it is, you got to try guys from within your organization, just like baseball teams have to try certain pitchers and that, because you never know. And I hope he can go out and, like many goaltenders that have surprised before, like James Reimer did years ago when Justin Pogge couldn't do it, be a competent backup goaltender.
Yeah, that's really what they're looking for, isn't it? And when you say in an ideal world, we talk about a team having a 1 and 1A, then that would be an ideal situation. But let's be clear, with this team right now, given the point in the season we're at, given what their payroll's at, best case scenario, I think, is you get a guy who is better than Michael Hutchinson, frankly.
Yeah.
That's a start.
Yeah, and James Reimer would have, like, he would be that guy who makes too much money now.
Yes.
Right? And Curtis McElhinney was that perfect guy, because right now, you're right, there is no, like, the New York Islanders tonight have a nice tandem going. They've had it for a couple of years, Varlamov and Greiss. The Boston Bruins have a tandem going with Halak and Tuukka Rask, and they're talking about, you know, guys playing less games. Toronto can't do that right now. Freddie Anderson cannot play fewer games. There's not a 1A, 1B situation. Might that change down the road? Who knows? But it's not going to be that case this season, so you're just hoping. Like, you can't be 0-5 and then be 0-10 and 0-15 in your second games, then you're possibly out of the playoffs, which I can't believe happening. But, you know, you flirt enough with that thing. You don't start on time. You don't have an NHL-caliber backup goaltender. Little things slip through the crack, and you could be in trouble.
Mm. Yeah, Gord, it's interesting because I read, I don't know if it was the Toronto Star or elsewhere, but I read comments from Lou Lamoriello, and he really spoke about his philosophy of making sure you have the financial flexibility to have a quality backup goalie, as the Islanders have, as you referenced, the Bruins have. And the Leafs cannot do that, given their cap situation, given their finances. But I thought it was interesting, if nothing else, just either he was asked about it or he volunteered it. But Lamoriello went into this idea that you really need that 1A, and maybe more teams should be thinking about adding a 1A.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that rode Marty Brodeur 75 games a season decades ago, right?
Yeah,
no,
yeah, it changed his mind. Yeah.
But what's changed, Richard and Jeff, is, and John Sebastian Giguere was with the Toronto Maple Leafs when he had injury woes and he had hip woes, is the goaltender, you're not a stand-up goaltender, so you're not even a stand-up guy during the play. You're almost like a baseball catcher now. You're putting that kind of strain on your hips, even when you're at, there's no such thing really as a resting position, by and large, with the whole butterfly and everything. It's really dramatically changed how exerting it is. So I think Lou Lamoriello is an excellent example of a guy understanding 20 years ago he could do it with Marty Brodeur, and 20 years later, that's not the ideal way to do it. And I understand that with the Toronto Maple Leafs, too. I mean, Freddie's a young guy, and you can ride some guys a little bit more, but in the big picture, that is a more ideal scenario, especially given the physical demands on goaltenders nowadays.
Mm. Mr. Stelic, appreciate you doing this. Look forward to Leafs Nation postgame tonight with yourself and Nick Alberga. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Gord.
Thank you, guys.
See ya.
Gord Stelic, and again, puck drop will be at 7 o'clock tonight on Sportsnet Ontario and on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Leafs Nation postgame with Nick Alberga, Gord Stelic, right after the final horn. Zach Hyman returning to the lineup for the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. Of course, Mitch Marner out for his second game, what is expected to be, in the very least, a four-week absence. Although, as several people pointed out yesterday, and as Zach Hyman, in fact, kind of suggested today, there is really no one-size-fits-all diagnosis for when a player can come back from an ankle injury. Yeah. So that, you know, there's absolutely no guarantee that he will be back in 4 weeks, but there's no guarantee that perhaps he won't be back just around 4 weeks.
If the Leafs lose a couple here, Jeff, and fall below the playoff qualification area, what's the DEFCON level around here?
Still
a little early to get a little too worried about that?
I think that not having Mitch Marner, I think that the fact that this injury means the Leafs will not have seen the team the optimum Leafs team this year until around Christmas. Sure, there might be fans that'll be upset, but I think there will be very, very little media chatter about Mike Babcock's status as a result of it. I mean, even those of us who don't necessarily worship at the altar of Mike Babcock have to admit that, yeah, the guy has not had a full team this year.
Yeah,
did not have a competent backup. And yes, we can sit here and say that that's a trade-off for having an uber-talented set of forwards. That's true, but the fact of the matter is the guy did not have a competent backup. And based on what I've seen from Michael Hutchinson, you know, my original take was, look, you've got to early in the year play Michael Hutchinson a couple of games to see what you have, yada, yada, yada. Mike Babcock clearly knew what he had with Mike Hutchinson. So I think, if anything, this has kind of put the kibosh on the whole Mike Babcock's under pressure situation right now. There's no percentage in that.
Yeah, and it's always worth reminding people that just remember where the Blues were in January.
That's a different thing. There's no Jordan Binnington is going to arrive and turn around. Like, there's nobody who is going to arrive and turn around this Leaf season.
Unless it's Mitch Marner.
He's already
coming back.
But I mean, he was already here.
No, I get it. I understand what you're saying.
The team that we know is the team that we know. Yeah. But I don't think that necessarily, is going to heap any more pressure on Mike Babcock. Where things get really interesting is if Tyson Barrie continues to have the type of performance he's having.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, there's already Cody Ceci's a guy no one's ever going to be happy with. That's just, there are some guys like that. At some point, if this continues, even those of us who have kind of gone in the Kyle Dubas camp, there's two camps in the Toronto media. Let's be honest about it. There's the sort of younger, sort of Kyle Dubas camp.
Analytics bent.
Which I tend to be in as far as I'm in any camp in hockey. And then there's the Mike Babcock is the greatest coach in the history of the game camp, which I don't tend to be in. But it's going to be hard to not start questioning Kyle Dubas even more if this thing continues. I don't think Mike Babcock necessarily had an excuse for what happened last year, but I think he may have an excuse if things go pear-shaped this year. Paul Jones is our Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Raptors take on the Portland Trailblazers tonight. And Paul Jones will join Richard Deitch and myself. We'll talk about this DeMar DeRozan rumor, see if Jonesy thinks it has any legs. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I got to tell you, there's some tension around here today. You notice that? Yeah, there's a lot of tension. I get the feeling Brandeo now is twice tried to catch me with my feet up on the desk during the break by saying 5 seconds. I am, yes. I am relaxed today.
You're throwing me off a little bit.
Brandeo's now claiming he gives me 30 seconds.
With this reaction.
But you're actually mad, aren't you, Derek, that I'm sitting there? You're not? Oh, you sound mad.
He doesn't really. I haven't seen him get mad at all. Have you ever seen Travis get mad? I've never seen him in my life.
Oh, I've seen Travis get mad.
Really?
I can't say when. I've seen him get mad. It's weird.
I didn't know he was capable.
It's kind of scary. You've never seen me get mad.
I've seen you heading down that road.
No, you've never seen me mad.
That's like an Incredible Hulk line.
No. I'm never mad. I'm usually pretty mellow.
All right. Good to know.
I just kind of go through life, handle things as it comes.
Really?
Make believe things. As they come. I've seen you mad. Travis says I'm lying. I've seen Travis mad. As a matter of fact, maybe before the show's over, I will talk about the one time I saw Travis so mad that he almost kicked a chair at me.
I'd like to hear. Ooh, not surprising on that. Yeah. I'd like to hear that story.
Many people would, but I won't tell it. I won't tell it on air. Paul Jones is our Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. He joins Richard Deitch and myself. Portland's an awesome city, is it not?
That's the sound of the phone dropping.
And with that,
should just call the show now.
See ya. That was the sound of a cell phone, of a call dropping. And the sense of timing is, other than when we had David Price doing an interview with us in Baseball Central and he flushed. I mean, he was clearly sitting on the commode doing the interview. And we got the sound of it flushing. That might be one of the most perfectly timed. That's a good instance of timing we've had. We also had Ren Lavoie pulled over by a Sûreté de Québec police officer for talking on a cell phone while he was driving. Doing the Blair Show, got like a $420 fine. So now we'll bring Paul Jones back. Did you hear what happened?
Who was that, JB? Who got that fine?
Ren Lavoie. on air.
Oh, boy.
On air. That's excuse me, Jeff, I've got the police officer here. I need to deal with this. And yeah, he was, well, I know we have the clip. Do you want to hear the clip?
In a hotel room. No, later. You can send it to me. I'm sitting in a hotel room here in Portland, so there won't be any of that with me. And to your first point, Portland is one of the underrated stops. On the circus tour that is the NBA. I tell you which two in the Northwest I really miss are Vancouver and Seattle.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Paul, have you hit Portland's food trucks, the area in the downtown where they have all these different food trucks? That
it's an expense account. He's not going to go to a freaking food truck.
That park and have just some of the most incredible cuisine that one can eat off the street or on the street.
I'm gonna have to hit that because
check that out,
Blair. Deitch is touching my nerve as a New Yorker,
right?
With, like, you know, the mystery meat and the poke your head into an establishment and in a window and get a hot dog or a slice of pizza or whatever, and you don't worry about what's in it. You just eat it and go.
Don't eat any food off the street.
Paul, this
whatever
is high end. This is not like garbage New York hot dog in Central Park. These are people who are chefs. The second thing is, you're going to have to Google this one because it's been a while since I've been in Portland, but there is a very famous donut shop, one of the greatest donut shops.
I was there last night. Voodoo Donuts.
Voodoo Donuts. What'd you think of that? Did you get the maple bacon donut?
It's a must on every trip, Voodoo Donuts. Sometimes they show up on the charter. Like, guys will, like, have a box and somebody will be walking down the aisle of the plane with donut. I remember the first time here in 96, Oliver Miller.
Well, why am I not surprised? Oliver Miller had a freaking cart of donuts. He had a shopping cart full of donuts.
He was walking down the main aisle, and this was a time when the plane was, we didn't have as many people traveling. It was like players in the front, coaches in the middle, and traveling media, which consisted of like me, Inglis, John Saunders, Leo, and Laurie Belanger, like, and then there was a producer and a director, like Chris McCracken, Brian Sheriff, and Leanna Bristol. Like, there were eight of us. That was it. And Big O walks down, and we're leaving Portland, and he's walking down the aisle like a guy serving food, going, donut, 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 as he leaned left and right, donut, donut. And that's where I first heard about Voodoo Donuts.
I'm glad you went, because I went into that store and I was just,
is there anything like Dick's?
It's
the burger place.
I'm not going down that road again. Okay. It is definitely the best donut in the United States of America. I can actually say that. I've never seen a donut shop with the creativity and taste of Voodoo Donuts. So Jonesy, once again, you have impressed me with your culinary instincts. As Blair was mocking me as I talked about this, but you have come through on this segment. And now, Blair, feel free to talk about whoever you want.
No, you asked the first question. You were...
All right, Paul.
Deitch now has vindication and verification.
I feel it.
That's right.
I, too, am a sugar freak and love donuts.
Love it. So. All right.
Well, isn't there a place in Philadelphia? Wasn't there a place that Kawhi and Kyle went out? Wasn't that a late night donut place during the playoffs
they
in
did,
Philadelphia?
No, they went to Insomnia Cookies.
Insomnia Cookies,
yeah,
sorry.
Which is good, but nowhere near this.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I mean,
I haven't been to Insomnia, but okay. Voodoo is.
Yeah, I mean,
Blair, Voodoo is right there, man.
Right.
I'll take it under.
It's like the Bob Gibson fastball, man. It's like the Bob Gibson fastball.
Yeah, I mean, like, like Insomnia Cookies is Aaron Gordon, Voodoo Donuts is Kevin Durant. I mean, Aaron Gordon's a nice player. Nice, delicious treat, but
ask a basketball only one voodoo question. Chunk.
All right, Jonesy, listen, we need to get the update on some of these guys. This is one question I asked E. Smith yesterday. I'll ask you. Any updated news on OG Anunoby when it comes to the eye?
No, and shoot around was canceled today. We will have to wait till we get to the arena. We do know he's not going to play, but we don't know what the update is from a medical standpoint, if he'll be ready for Dallas or when he'll be ready next week or if he's ready next week. We don't know that. And, Eric and I did the game, and there were two guys in the vicinity. I know Devlin said he thought it was Kawhi that got him in the eye, but, you know, Edward Scissorhands, a.k.a. Patrick Beverly, was right there, too. and there were two guys reaching for OG and the ball in the area of the right eye. And I don't know if Beverly got him before Kawhi or he got him and Kawhi didn't. But, you know, OG left the arena with a patch over his eye. So, you know, it's too bad because the kid, again, he starts to play well again. And they need him. And then this happens, you know. As Nick said, he was going to be our primary defender on Kawhi. And they still held him to 2-for-11.
Do you?
So,
and the year he had last year, you just sort of wish for some luck for him. Good job, Blair, finding the voodoo donut. That's unbelievable on the online.
They have a thing called the Loop, raised yeast donut with vanilla frosting and Fruit Loops.
Fantastic.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah, it's insane.
Oh, I mean, Fruit Loops is the best thing
now
ever.
Now you're sending me back there tonight after the game. Now
there you go.
Come
Fruit
on.
Loops. And there's a long. So it's really good, actually. After I went there at night, get some coffee. Line up on that line because there's always a line
coffee,
there with tourists.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. All right, the second one is, Paul, do you think at this point, one of the things that Nick talked about certainly before the season was who could he trust? He singled out Rondae Hollis Jefferson, Stanley Johnson, kind of made clear at that point he didn't trust him. Now, having seen this road trip and how people have played against the Lakers and the Clippers, where are particular Rondae Hollis Jefferson, Chris Boucher, Matt Thomas, and why am I blanking on the guards?
Terrence Davis.
What's that? And Terrence Davis.
Stanley Johnson?
Yeah, no, Stanley Johnson's not part of this. But I'm saying, is Nick, you think, at the point now where, because of necessity, these guys have earned his trust, and when the full compartment is back, do we have a little bit of a bench mob now?
Well, maybe, Richard, and it was a great point because Nick talked about that before the game against the Clippers, or before the game against the Lakers, when he said, you know, I really like eight guys, and I don't have two of those guys, so I better start liking some other guys pretty quickly. And I thought Rondae Hollis Jefferson was really good in the Laker game. And Nick, you know, Nick broke it down after the game, said he's a guy that does most of his stuff with hustle, so it's easy for him to stay ready. And I wonder if that's what Nick didn't see when he wasn't playing him earlier in the year. And, you know, he came out and he did a really, really good job. So, look, I think you got a point there, Richard. I mean, Chris Boucher has been terrific. He has just been pining to get off the bench and get into the rotation. And, you know, he had a career-high 15 against the Lakers, 13 against the Clippers. Unfortunately, he got into foul trouble, but had some huge defensive plays. So I think that, I mean, it's never bad when guys from the bench have an opportunity and then they play well because it as you said, it gives them a bit of a bench mob. It gives them more depth. It gives the coach confidence that he can go to these guys when he needs to.
What challenge will Portland present the Raptors tonight? I mean, obviously CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, that's where you start, but Jonesy, the fact you're playing a team that relies so much on those two guards to score the ball and everything goes through those guys, is that going to change, do you think, what Nick tries to do tactically tonight? Do you maybe have more zone tonight? See him use the zone again?
Maybe, but maybe you get into him. I mean, you're coming off a back-to-back. They lost last night in Sacramento. They are not... Look, it's early still, but this is a team that went to the conference finals last year, and they're sitting at 4-7 right now.
Yep.
And things aren't, I mean, it's still early, but things, they haven't jumped out of the gate the way they, you know, they wanted to. So, look, Nick has done a great job of developing schemes all the way along. So I think it's just a matter of, you might see some zone, but then again, you know, you don't want to play the zone and your guys played a little lazy and they start making shots and they start feeling confident. It's a tough building to play in. It really is.
Very.
It's a great crowd. They give their team lots of energy. I just think if you're Toronto, you want to come out and jump on them. And I don't think you're going to see the schemes like you did against Kawhi and LeBron, where when a guy catches the ball, there's a double team and they're coming right at him. I don't think you're going to see that because
you know, McCollum and Lillard in particular, they can beat you on the dribble if you run two guys at them. Now you're down two guys. Now it's a 5-on-3. I'll be interested to see what kind of schemes he uses. And I'll also be interested to see how aggressive guys like Van Vliet and Powell are to maybe sit those guys down and get him in some foul trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you know, just thinking after asking the question about the zone, I mean, it depends. If Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum aren't tired, you probably do want to get up in them. You probably don't want to give them free
shots.
That's
where OG really would have been helpful because he's a perfect guard for CJ, given his length and defense. You know, one thing, Paul, I know you have to take each of these games on the road trip as one-offs because that's how all these guys have to approach it, but the way I look at it is you can get one over the next two against Portland or Dallas, and you come back from this road trip 3-2, including a win against the Lakers. If I would have told you that before the road trip, you would have said that's a great road trip. So I feel like they're one win away from surviving this West Coast, not just surviving this West Coast road trip, but having, in my opinion, a great road trip given the man down they are.
They've had winning records against the West for the last few years, Richard, on the road, in general. And they played them well on the road. So there's part of me that's not surprised. And you're right. If you'd have said, how about a 2-3? You'd say, yeah, okay, I'll take it. 3-2, you'd say, hey, that's good.
Yeah.
And let's face it, you still have a chance for a 4-1. And if you're 4-1, and look, I know there was a loss to the Clippers the other night, but they were right there.
Yep.
They didn't get the good whistle. They scored only 10 points in the fourth quarter. They were, they were 4 of 24, blocked the rim. Like I said, didn't get great calls, and they were still right there. And outside of Paul George, the Clippers were a lot healthier than Toronto was. Let's put it that way. So, I think our colleagues in the U.S. that are underplaying this Toronto team. That, some of them had them not making the playoffs, and, they'll finish seventh. Like, come on. I mean, there's the remnants here of the championship team. Doc Rivers said in his news conference on Monday night, he said, the Raptors have the championship rub. Like, they're not going to go away. They know they've done it before, and it doesn't matter who's there and who's not there. The guys left over, Gasol, he's not healthy right now, Lowry. Ibaka, those two guys are out, but Van Vliet, Powell, Ananobi, they all know what it's like. And I gave the example of I was trying to build a shed a few years ago in my backyard, and I followed the instructions to a T, and I got to the end, and I couldn't get the top left corner square. And my neighbor next door is a foreman on a construction site. They build all kinds of homes, and he comes over and he drops the shed a couple times, bangs it on the left side, and it squares up. And I say, oh, is that how you do it? He goes, yeah. And right away, it's like, that's why this guy builds homes. He knows what he's doing. And the Raptors now know how to square the shed. They do. They were with Kawhi and Danny, and they understand what to do.
Jonesy, we just have a couple of seconds left here. I wanted to ask you about the report of the Orlando Magic having interest in DeMar DeRozan. This is, by my count now, the third sort of rumor involving DeMar. In this case, we know that Jeff Weltman, of course, would be familiar with DeMar. Does that move make any sense for you?
In the way that they're probably trying to get a little bit more veteran experience, yeah. But they're going to have to maybe give up some of those young guys.
Right.
They built that team, John Hammond and Jeff Weltman, the same way that they kind of built the team in Milwaukee with the long athletic players. I mean, you think about, Jonathan Isaac, Mo Bamba. Like, you think about those kids.
Mm-hmm.
DeMar would be a veteran guy like DeMar would be really, really good. Really, really good to help out down there. And again, there's another team that, they got into the playoffs last year. They had a heck of a run at the end of the year in the second half post All-Star, and they start off 3-7. So, everybody's looking for, I know it's a long season, but you got to start running the race when the gun goes off.
Jonesy, we're going to let you scoot. Go have some donuts.
No, I'm on pregame. The donuts are postgame, man.
Oh, man, I can't believe this. The Loop, raised yeast donut with vanilla frosting and Fruit Loops. Oh, Captain, my Captain, raised yeast donut with vanilla frosting and Captain Crunch. This is almost going to make me cry.
Yeah. Maple bacon, though.
Take care, Jonesy.
Have fun, Paul.
All right, guys.
All righty. Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Our donut correspondent from the Pacific Northwest.
Okay, this is really selling me, man.
Yeah, Blair, you mocked me, and now you can't get off it. So maybe listen to the American every now and then.
Well, not really. It's generally a bad
But it thing. Is a. It is really. It no, is. It's good. The best donut shop in the United States.
All right,
bar none.
I'm about to agree with you.
Yeah,
on
they
it
just do crazy stuff. They put crazy stuff on donuts.
Oh God, this looks good. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, the Leafs get back on the ice tonight against the New York Islanders. Zach Hyman returns to the lineup. John Tavares returns to Long Island. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 7 o'clock. Butch Goring, Islanders TV analyst with MSG, will join us in a few momentos to break down the game for you, get you set for the game tonight as Lou Lamoriello's Islanders take on Lou Lamoriello's old team, the Leafs.
I saw a lot of Islander games as a kid. They were a fun group back in the day, back in the early 80s.
Don't yawn on the air. It's not a good thing.
I wasn't yawning. I was thinking, actually. I thought I had something interesting to say, but I honestly didn't.
All I remember about Nassau County Coliseum was...
What a dump.
It was.
It still is.
The last game I would have covered there would have been 19... No, it'd be early 2000s.
I don't want to make the presumption, but it was a hockey game as opposed to something
else. Yeah, it was a hockey game, and there were just... All I remember is...
This is really terrible.
There was the biggest rats I've seen in my life were in the Astrodome. The Astro Rats. They were huge.
But great home ice advantage because it's really, the sight lines are great. It's a loud building, but it's really a dump.
I was not covering it, you know, back in the day when they were winning Stanley Cups, but guys say that building would just shake back in the 80s, including one of the guys who were going to be joined by Butch Goring, who was part of those great Islanders teams.
Trades of all time.
I've talked about this a couple of times now. I'm going to do it again. We got to get Ken Dryden or Scotty Bowman on. But Ken Dryden's written a book on Scotty Bowman where Scotty takes his eight best teams that he's seen in his lifetime and breaks them down and puts them in a head-to-head competition against each other. Those Islanders teams get a lot of love from him.
I was fortunate to be on a couple of times when Scotty Bowman was on with Bob. It was amazing.
Scotty's the best.
You just like literally, Jeff, there are only a few people who are like kind of living legends that you can get on.
He and Bill Belichick are the two greatest coaches in my lifetime.
You could honestly make the argument Scotty Bowman's the greatest team coach of all time. Coach of a team sport.
I would lean towards that, yeah.
Yeah, I think, absolutely. I mean, I have to think about it a little bit, but he's certainly...
I mean, John Wooden was pretty obvious.
He's in the top four, and then it's a question of how do you measure him against a Wooden or a Belichick.
Absolutely, no question. Anyhow, Butch Goring, part of those great Islanders teams, that Scotty Bowman had so much respect for. Butch Goring's now the Islanders TV analyst with MSG. I can remember Butch Goring's helmet. Little bucket helmets. They were spectacular. Butch Goring joins us. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
They are rewriting afternoon sports radio one word at a time. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It is the final hour. The Writer's Block. Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch.
A coffee bag. Coffee off. That is delicious iced coffee. Thank you, Travis. Man, that is good. Yeah. Probably regular milk, which I probably shouldn't have, but boy, that is delicious.
Regular milk? You shouldn't have regular milk?
Probably more have, given my advancing age, almond milk or something like that, but that is good. That tastes like straight from the cow.
No, you need, once you get old, you need milk because your bones start to...
I know, but whole milk, pretty highly caloric. I don't know how great it is for you. Anyway, the point is there's really good milk in there. Thank you. Milk from a farm, baby. Delicious.
Honest to God.
You know, sometimes if you haven't had milk for a while, sometimes like a nice big glass of milk is just fantastic. If you haven't had it for a while. Let me let the audience in on that. That is, and maybe a little, some hot chocolate chip cookies. Delicious. It's one thing having little kids. You see them drinking milk and you're like, damn, that looks good. All right, anyway. Who's coming up on the show right now? Dave Sampson?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know. There are just some days where I really do just want to let you, like, the stream of consciousness stuff is great.
Today I feel like I've had a lot of stream of consciousness. I always have to mitigate a little bit. It is a live mic. But I could just go in 25 different places.
It's one of those days. Yeah, that's right. Derek Brandeo says there's too much impeachment hearings earlier today.
Brandeo and I were watching.
You were hunkered down with that. I don't bother because it's not going to make any difference.
We'll say this. Not that anybody cares about my opinion, but Admiral Taylor today, honorable man. You ever see The Verdict? That scene at the end of the film when basically Paul Newman knows that basically everybody's been lying.
We've gone through chocolate chip cookies. How much you like the milk in your iced coffee or iced coffee, which is a fraudulent concept to begin with in November in Canada. Now you want to talk about The Verdict. And you always preface your movie things by saying, have you ever seen? And you know damn well, Richard, that I haven't seen.
Well, The Verdict's a great film, Jeff. Paul Newman, I can't presume you haven't seen that.
But
it's
one of the great films of
its era.
Sidney
Lumet, great director.
I don't watch a lot of
all right,
movies.
Anyway, I'll do this very quickly. Basically, Paul Newman is a lawyer. He's been sort of sold out by his lover. He's going up against like the biggest firm in Boston, and he's down and out lawyer. But he has the truth on his side. And at the end, he makes this summation where he says, he basically tells the jury that today you're the law, not the judge, not the other side. You are justice. You can represent what the truth ultimately is.
What's this got to do with milk?
My point is, when I saw Admiral Taylor today, I sort of thought of the summation of that film. Because the guy basically is an ambassador in Ukraine. He's just answering questions honestly. And the Newman summation and The Verdict was playing in my head. Anyway, I hope I haven't lost anybody. Who's listening, but we'll get back to sports talk.
No.
Rich Goring.
That's fine.
Love that guy. 91. That was a great trade the Islanders made. Make the argument maybe the greatest late season trade in NHL history.
I don't know.
I'm just going stream of consciousness, Jeff.
Maybe the greatest late season trade in NHL history?
I think it's up there. I mean, if we had a Gord Stellick or somebody can confirm that.
Somebody
but
who knew hockey there. Would be able to tell
Justin
us.
Bourne type or David Amber. I like seeing different people on Hockey Central before we come on. I like that. I like the fact that they change it up. It's actually pretty cool to me. So you got Amber and Bourne, Anthony Stewart one day, and then sometimes you got Marchese. Sometimes you got Merrick. I like it. Anyway, Travis, how's the show going today?
All right, we'll be joined in a few minutes by Butch Goring. Travis is struggling with technology today. Now he's got to talk to Butch for 20 minutes before he patches him over to us.
He's probably reminiscing about 79.
There you go. The Islanders, by the way, will attempt to extend their point streak to 13 games. All joshing aside, this team is 12-3-1.
Yeah. They're good.
They are 11-0-1 in their last 12.
I mean, the Leafs should get beat tonight if you're doing it based on, who's the better team at the moment, who's streaking, better goaltending in terms of a pairing, not necessarily their starter. So it'd be really interesting to see how the Leafs play tonight.
Absolutely. Butch Goring, Islanders TV analyst in the MSG Network, joins us now in Writer's Block. Butch, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for your patience. What's been, to you, the most impressive thing about the Islanders during this run of, 13 games right now?
I think you know, their ability to keep the puck out of their net. They've had a little luck here and there, but overall, their goaltending's been solid, and they just don't give the opposition a whole lot of opportunities. I mean, they do a really nice job of getting their sticks in the shooting lanes, you know, the typical blocking shots and blocking out so the goaltender has a chance to see. And it's not just a defenseman. It's a five-man unit that works hard to play defense. And, you know, when I ask them about those type of things, they just say it's accountability, Butch. It's plain and simple. Barry Trotz holds us accountable for the way we play. And if we don't play that way, then we don't play. So pretty simple formula.
Butch, you have been you've been around the island for a long time. And I wonder if you can just sort of illuminate for us how much the culture has changed with Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz. Because I have to be honest, I'm so impressed by what they've been able to do in, honestly, a very, very short amount of time.
Yeah, it's, there's no doubt that it's a complete turnaround. I mean, it's been well documented about going from, you know, last in the league or worst in the league with goals against to the best in the league. And that in itself is an incredible accomplishment. And you can attribute it to, really, to two factors, or three, really. The ownership deciding to make a move and going out and getting Lou Lamoriello, and then Lou Lamoriello going out and getting Barry Trotz. So that's the first step, and it's obviously been very successful. But Lou Lamoriello came in, and you guys know him in Toronto very, very well. He changed the culture. I mean, he took, I guess for lack of a better term, he took the fun out of the game and said, hey, we're here to play hockey. We're here to play hockey. We're here to act like hockey players. And we're going to perform in an environment that's conducive to being a hockey player. And so everybody was forced to get on board. I mean, not just the players, but the training staff, the entire organization. They've all had to get on board and buy into, you know, what Lou Lamoriello's is selling or saying. And then, of course, Barry Trotz has really followed that up, because it's pretty much the same thing. Everybody, every one of the players talks about Barry Trotz as being a very detailed, orientated guy, which is a lot like Lou Lamoriello. So the two of them have been a real, real good fit, and there's no denying the results. And the players would be fools if they didn't continue to believe in it, because they've had an incredible success.
You know, when you look at this Islanders team, you know, there are so many names that kind of jump off at you. But one guy in particular I've heard people talk about, and a guy who in his second year seems to be taking a step forward, and probably, I mean, maybe, again, not having watched the team as much as you have, but maybe explains a little bit why the Islanders have become so damn stingy, and that's Devin Toews. It just seems as if the Islanders are now, Butch, at a point where they're starting to find those guys, right? Guys that just sort of improve right underneath your nose.
Well, I think, you know, you look at the staff of not only Barry, but his entire staff, and they work hard to, you know, not only to get the guys to understand what their role is, but then allow them to be that person and give them the opportunity to work with it. And Devon Toews is a perfect example. That entire core, really, is, you know, are all, for lack of a better term, you know, they mimic one another in the way they progress and the opportunities. I mean, you know, last year, both the Ryan Pollock and Adam Pellick, they were thrown into the number one roles. I mean, as Barry told them, hey, you, and it's going to take time, but, you know, you're going to play against the best offensive players on the opposition. And they obviously relished the opportunity, the ice time, and now they've matured into a really good, you know, shut down pair. And so the same can be said for Toews, is that he was given an opportunity. He came off some injuries the year before, but he was given the opportunity, paired up with Scott Mayfield, and they have functioned extremely well. And again, you know, we always talk about confidence plays such a huge factor in anybody's game. Well, you know, first off, you have to earn ice time under Barry Trotz, but then once you earn it and you gain his confidence, well, then the confidence in the player continues to grow. And that's really what's happening for Toews, but for a whole lot of people on this hockey team.
Butch, you saw the reaction that John Tavares got the first time he went back to the island. It was intense. I mean, I think there were some in the crowd who were out for blood, not literally per se, but certainly emotionally, psychically. What do you expect tonight regarding the reaction to John?
Well, I think it'll be tempered quite a bit. Last year was crazy, and I understood it. The fans here are very passionate, and they love John Tavares when he was here as a player, and John never gave anything less than 100%, and you guys all know that in Toronto now, having watched him play for a little over a year. But they didn't like it the way it went down, and they let him know. I personally was hoping that during the video, when it was being played, that they would let up a little bit and appreciate what he did bring and what he did give. But that was me, and that wasn't to be. But I think John, every time he comes to Long Island, is going to get booed. But it's probably going to be less and less as time goes on. So, in some ways, it tells you how good a hockey player you were. People don't boo bad players.
Great point.
So it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not the worst thing in the world.
One of the guys who's really taken advantage of the opportunity presented by John Tavares leaving is Brock Nelson. I believe he had a shot at unrestricted free agency, I believe, signed a 6-year contract to stick with that team. How has his year progressed, and how do you view him going forward?
I think he's continued to improve his game. Again, he's another guy that was given an opportunity, as you mentioned, with John Tavares leaving. It opened up the spot to be the number one or number two centerman, depending on who you're talking to or when you're talking to Barry at any given day. Gave Brock a chance to get more ice time. And again, it's the same, mm-hmm. it's a reoccurring theme for Barry Trotz. Barry Trotz told Brock Nelson that, hey, you're going to be this two-way shutdown guy for the team, and we expect you to produce offense. So, right away he was given a role, a much bigger piece of the pie, so to speak, and if you can't respond then, when you're put in that position, then shame on you. And Brock did respond. He improved as a player. You could see his commitment was much, much stronger. And he would tell you that the fact that he was just given this opportunity, that he wanted to seize that opportunity. He has done. He continues to. I mean, Barry Trotz loves him, speaks him. You talk about Barry a lot. About Brock Nelson, and he'll give you glowing reports, loves the way he plays. He's a detailed guy, and right away, as soon as you hear that word, detailed guy, well, that's Barry Trotz's kind of guy, a person that pays attention to the details. So he's been very, very good, and his game, as Barry said early on in the year, his game hasn't topped out yet. He's got room to grow yet, and so that's a nice positive sign, but in the interim of that, he's been a very solid player.
Leo Komarov, we believe, is expected back tonight. What will he bring to this team, and will there be any restrictions on him?
I don't think so. They have the luxury to be able to bring people up who've done a remarkable job. And Uncle Leo, as everybody calls him out here, and I'm sure he was the same uncle in Toronto. He's just a great guy, and he's good in the dressing room. I think he has the ability to relax people around him. And he's a good penalty killer. He's just a checker. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. He's not a goal scorer, and he would tell you. Matter of fact, I asked him one day, do you aim at all when you're shooting? And he said, no, I just throw it at the net. So, and that's kind of who he is. He plays. And he's a real big personality on the ice and off the ice. So I expect him to play. I'm not sure what he'll play because Barry moves everybody. And he's got different plans, I'm sure, with centermen playing wings and wings playing center. So you're never quite sure what's going to happen at the start, and you're never quite sure what's going to happen as the game progresses, because he'll make changes if he's not happy, if his team's not winning.
Butch, as someone who was a successful player during your playing era and obviously has now stayed with the game for years afterwards, Jeff and I had a conversation not too long ago about the decline of the slap shot in the NHL, and the slap shot was certainly a weapon when you played, but as the statistics will point out, it's really been reduced in the game. And I wonder just how you see that, given that you played when that was a real that got a lot of usage on teams And now today, it has drastically been reduced, certainly since your era, but even since 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I thought about it a little bit myself, and the first thing that comes to mind is just the time and the space that the guys don't have anymore. Like, there was just a lot more. There wasn't that back-checking pressure. You know, it's more like pick up your wing or protect the middle, so you left kind of the puck carrier to the defenseman, so you didn't have that back pressure, so you had the opportunity to let that shot go. And if it was from outside the dots, you know, it was, okay, goalie, you've got it, and most of the time they would have it. So that's not around anymore. They just don't have that time and space. And the other thing is I think that guys now shoot more to get a puck on net than to score. More than anything else. I think that, you know, the goalies are so big and they're so agile, and they come out of the top of the crease. And so, you know, you take that big slap shot, it's almost like they can take another 3 or 4 inches forward and you know, completely take away any opportunity you have. So I think guys are looking more to, unless they have a real clear opportunity, just to snap it on net and look for a deflection or a rebound.
Butch, was great of you to do this. Thanks so much.
Always my pleasure, guys. Anytime you want to talk hockey, I'm always available.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
be
Butch.
Well.
Enjoy the game.
Take care.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Butch Goring, Islanders TV analyst.
Good one, too.
Oh, Manitoban.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He's a good analyst. I've heard him on Islanders broadcast. He's smart.
He's a lot of fun.
Thoughtful. Knows the game.
Good player, man.
Excellent.
I love those teams.
Great center. Great.
I love those teams.
I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he was the second line center behind Trotsky. I think like he was that caliber of player, right?
He was a very good player.
Yeah.
He was a very good player. Again, Islanders Leafs tonight, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario. Leafs Nation postgame with El Berga and Stellick right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The San Francisco Giants just formally unveiled Gabe Kapler as their new manager. It was about
that press conference lasted 50
hours. I was going to say it didn't go 50 hours, but it went 50 minutes.
Yeah.
A lot of dissatisfaction in the Bay Area. Farhan Zaidi, the general manager of the Giants, and Gabe Kapler, who was, of course, the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies last year, when they were with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and Kapler was one of the people overseeing the Dodgers minor league system, they were criticized, and rightfully so, criticized heavily for how they handled a number of situations. I believe were they all domestic violence situations?
Some
were domestic violence situations within the organization. There are a lot of people in San Francisco who aren't happy with the hiring. There are a couple of employees. I know one employee in particular, somebody who used to work for the team, who said that he's giving up his season's tickets.
Wow.
There's a lot of dissatisfaction with that. And that's one of the things you want to talk to David Sampson about. We also, of course, want to talk to him about the cheating Houston Astros and whether or not the Astros have done irrevocable damage. Irrevocable damage, Mr. Deitch. Not only to the reputation, but to the status. The status, Mr. Deitch, but to their status as one of the best franchises in baseball.
Again, I'm not sure anybody thought of the Astros in romantic terms, but now you just I think you just think of them as great players, but probably cheated their way to some wins.
Oh, yes. Deflategate.
I do feel bad for the Bregmans and some of the guys who I think are really great players and good dudes on that team.
Alex Bregman's woke by baseball standards.
You got to now live under that stench.
Yeah, it's awful. I'm sure the money will make up for it. David Sampson is host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. That's what I wanted to call this show, but they wouldn't let me do it. Nothing Personal with David Sampson. It's a podcast. He's also MLB analyst for CBS Sports Headquarters. David Sampson will join Richard Deitch and myself. Don't go anywhere. This could get scary. At least
I
odd.
Talk to Sampson.
It's writer's block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet 360.
Now, more writer's block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block.
I'm I'm multitasking. But I'm back. I'm focused.
No, I just wanted to know who kept, because somebody keeps sending you those, you know, those little bubble messages.
Yeah, I know.
Who is it?
Instant messaging.
Who is it? Tell us.
That's my wife was texting me a couple of things.
Oh.
Doing some multitasking action going on. It's all handled at the moment.
So it is my conclusion, supposition. It's my definitive statement on all things Houston Astros that this cheating scandal involving the Astros is Major League Baseball's version of Deflategate.
Yeah, I think
it's sports talk radio now. We can do whatever we want.
No, I hear you, and I'm not saying it's not serious, but I mean, Spygate is one of the biggest sports scandals of the last 15 years. You put the Astros one up there?
Oh, I think it's got potential.
Maybe. We need more players to come out with more stories of cheating.
Well, let's see. Let's see what David Sampson thinks about it. He's host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. It's a podcast. He's also MLB analyst for CBS Sports HQ. When you guys would go into Houston, did you hear players banging on garbage cans with bats and stuff like that, David?
No, not at all. And there's no way that the MLB investigators are judging anything based on videos that appear on the internet that appear to have banging prior to a home run being hit by players, right? Anyone can doctor any video or audio tape on the inter-Google. Mm-hmm. So the investigation is going to be much deeper than that.
Are you surprised that it's gotten to this point? Well, first of all, David, are you surprised that a player would come out and say this? And I know Trevor Bauer took a lot of grief, you know, at the start of last season when he suggested the Astros were doing something untoward. But here you got a guy like Mike Fiers, and I don't know what would be in it for him. He's a former Astros pitcher. Are you surprised somebody would kind of break that code?
Well, no, I'm not. I mean, what's in it for Fiers is, remember, he did not get a long-term deal from the Astros. They let him go. He became a free agent. But I think that all the players, it's the unspoken truth about baseball. Everyone's trying to steal signs, and everyone's trying to find out which pitchers are tipping. And they're not going to tell you if you're tipping pitches. They're going to get down on the knob and try to hit home runs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not new. What is new is that there's a rule from baseball, a directive about a center field camera that has to be basically registered with MLB. And if Houston was not abiding by the rule this year, it was not in place in 2017 when the Astros supposedly were doing it, when the Red Sox got disciplined for doing it using electronic equipment the wrong way. So this is more about having electronic equipment being used to do what is allowed to be done, which is steal signs, but you just can't use certain equipment to do it.
Mm.
So, David, how do you think there's one thing about the violating the rules or violating whatever baseball's letter of the law? The other thing is the optics and how the sport perceives it, how the fans of a sport perceive it, how the opposing fans of teams perceive it. Jeff and I were talking about where this, you know, what legs this will have. Will it change people's perception of the Astros the way Deflategate, Spygate has changed people's perception of the Patriots?
Well, it's an add-on, right? So you look at the Patriots, you know, you look at what videotaping practices, you look at deflating balls. It's sort of, it piles on top of each other. The Astros have had a reputation where they definitely have a tendency to be more aggressive than other teams may be or more out about it. But let's not forget the Astros were victims of this chicanery by the St. Louis Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
When someone actually broke into the Astros system. But people are using confirmation bias right now all over the web, and they're getting the story wrong by saying it was the Astros who did that to the Cardinals. So that's their excuse for the pile-on.
Right.
In fact, it was the other way around, and people view the Cardinals as the greatest, you know, franchise in the world. So every team is doing things that if you actually examined it, you wouldn't be proud of all of them. The question is, who does it better?
Mm. David, I want to explore this line of thought. The Astros very, very publicly tried to, let's just be blunt, defame a reporter. They put out a statement calling a story false, calling it defamatory. Of course, as we all know, had to walk that back. The Astros were incorrect, eventually fired their assistant GM, had to basically eat it in front of the public. My sense is, David, that they, if we're going to be honest, I think would be a maybe target is not the right word, but I think there would be a lot of reporters who would probably take personal satisfaction in finding out things about the Astros. Do you think because of that, we're going to maybe see more investigative work by the press when it comes to this story, meaning maybe more players eventually come out and say what they know about it?
You know, it's funny. I think that there's so many people on Twitter. There's so many people who have voices. So everybody is now an investigative journalist, right?
Right.
It used to be we had to watch 60 Minutes in order to see a big story or a dateline. Now it's anybody with a Twitter handle. So anybody who can find anything on any team is going to post it and then cause an investigation, which is why MLB has a Department of Investigations now, because there's so much investigation you need to have since the sort of steroid scandals of 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So what I think is happening now is you've got, from an Astros standpoint, they need PR help desperately.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they cannot publicly stand up and say that they did this is that their biggest concern is that it goes all the way to Jeff Luhnow and Jim Crane. And that's what baseball's trying to figure out, because if it does go that high, that's a problem. So think back to the Cardinals, guys. Remember Bill DeWitt and Mozeliak, the president of baseball ops and the owner?
Yeah.
It was specifically stated they had no idea what was going on.
Right.
Well,
give me a break.
Yeah. No, David, here's the other thing, though, that sort of concerns me about this, regardless of how it turns out. I mean, we're at a point now where people are talking about an electronic strike zone. We call it robot umpires, but they're talking about an electronic strike zone. And you know, one of the concerns I have is if you can't guarantee the technological integrity of your game right now, the hell are you going to do bringing in an electronic strike zone? Like, how am I supposed to, as a fan, or maybe more importantly, as someone, if I'm going to start gambling legally in baseball, I want to be assured that it's on the up and up, right?
That's just a gambling. People are trying to talk about that, Jeff, and I hear you. But to me, if there is you have to take that into account, right? And that goes into the line. If the Astros are known to have technological advancements, if they're known that they have a tendency or propensity to steal signs or stretch the legal limits, or sometimes illegal limits of what's allowed, that's going to be reflected in the line of the game. So I'm not as worried about the impact on gambling. I'm worried about the integrity of actual final scores. And if George Springer or Alex Bregman are teeing up and hitting all these home runs simply because they're getting the sign, well, I'm not buying that, right? Because you have to look at their home road splits. You can't just look at one video of one bang,
right,
and say, look, the Astros shouldn't have won the World Series. I'm looking at their home road splits. I'm thinking about what a player's approach is, where their hot zone is, where the pitch was, what were they hot or cold at that moment. So there's so many things that go into it. And listen, I'd love to burn the Astros in effigy, only in that they drove me crazy when I was in the game because they're so holier than thou.
Mm-hmm.
So but I'm just not willing to do it right now until someone proves to me that this went all the way to the top and that half the people didn't know about it and half the people did. Because as a team, the Marlins, everyone knew that our signs were being stolen and we were trying to steal other people's.
Right.
David, let's say the Astros are found by Major League Baseball to have, whatever, violated whatever rule it was. They shouldn't have had a person in center field filming something. They shouldn't have picked up signs, whatever. What realistically, what's a just punishment for Major League Baseball? And is it as simple as a certain monetary fine and losing certain draft picks?
Listen, that's what I was going to tell you. It's fines and a draft pick. What do you think? They're going to take away the 2017 World Series or replay any games? It's absurd to even think that way. They're going to make the owner sell the team. They're going to make the owner fire Jeff Luhnow. Come on, none of that is going to happen. Realistically, there'll be an investigation, a slap on the wrist, which will be in the form of a fine, maybe a couple draft picks lost, and then it's on to the next crisis.
Shifting focus a little bit away from the Astros and into another favorite topic, Scott Boras. He basically controls the entire offseason, does he not, with his free agent list? And, I mean, I'll ask you as someone who's dealt with him, how big do you think his binders are going to be this offseason, the binders that he gives teams for each free agent?
I'm pretty sure the binders will have a direct correlation to the size of the head.
Okay. All right.
He controls the whole market, and he knows it, and he's going to hold court, and he's going to wait and wait and wait, and there's going to be more and more talk about how great he is and how much money he gets for his clients, and then it's a self-feeding sort of machine where that gets more players to want to be with Boris, and then this happens again, and the whole offseason is put on hold, and it impacts all 30 teams. Mm-hmm. It's dreadful for him.
David, what is realistic, or maybe not what is realistic, but how many teams are realistic suitors for Gerrit Cole?
I would say that 7 think they are, and 3 probably are. Mm-hmm. And I would put that as the Yankees and the Angels and the Phillies are realistic. Hmm. The others, I would say, are not.
And then in terms of those 3 teams, how would you rank them in terms of 1, likability for Cole to sign there, and 2, need in terms of the team that really needs him?
Let's get this straight. Likability of Cole is looking for the top dollar. There he is. He can say he wants to be on the West Coast. No. Cole will sign to whoever offers him the most money, even if it's by a penny. So that is not a talk about where he'd prefer, which team needs him. The Angels are desperate for pitching. The Yankees are desperate for pitching, and so are the Phillies. Wherever he goes, he turns into their number one starter, other than staying in Houston, actually. And even there, he may be the number one. So he is hard to get, hard to find, but it's hard to believe that he will be that good for 7 more years. So you are buying at the absolute high. Mm.
By the way, you'll be pleased to know that Scott Boras was at general managers meetings in Scottsdale today, David. And this is his quote: "If this were Major League Christmas, we'd be looking at 30 stockings that wanted a lump of coal."
Nice.
Scott. I'm hearing that for the first time, and I'm trying to stop from passing out because I'm near a table with a corner. I'm going to breathe, and I know that's hard to see on radio, but right now I'm just breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth.
Nice. Scott.
He speaks in such hyperbole that it's laughable to me, actually.
Scott's doing the second set of Carolines on West 48th and Broadway tomorrow with that stand-up. Do you, David, one of the things that I think will be interesting is the timing of free agent signs. Let's forget about Gerrit Cole for a second, or even Anthony Rendon, the highest of the high. One of the things that happened last year, of course, was this market. It took forever for people to sign. Do you have any, or should we have any expectations that maybe the market gets accelerated a little bit this year? Or once again, are we going to be heading into December, January, and February to see some signings?
Yeah, I believe so. And here's the problem. I think you could have some middle relievers, some guys who are willing to take, like the Adam Wainwrights of the world, who signed for 1 year, $5 million plus $5 million incentives. You get the Darren O'Days, 1 year, a couple million bucks here or there. But in terms of multi-year deals, we're going to see who does or does not take qualifying offers tomorrow. And I think 2 or 3 of the guys may end up taking the 1 year qualifying offer, like the Will Smith or Jose Abreu, could both easily end up taking it. So in terms of free agency, there's no incentive, which is why MLB wanted to set a deadline for multi-year contracts to be signed to bring some excitement to the hot stove. Because right now it's not hot, and people are sort of talking about it because nothing happens until December, January. So the GM meetings used to be a launching point, which some people in the media still write about. The GM meetings are not a launching point for anything. Neither are the winter meetings.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you were talking, I was thinking about, of course, the importance of the GM meetings to that deal that the Marlins put together with the Expos for the Mark Burley, Josh Johnson, Jose Reyes deal. That was concocted at the GM's meetings, more or less, was it not?
That was the Blue Jays and the Marlins back in 2012.
Right.
And that was worked on both prior to and during the GM meetings. And that is, you know, there are trades that can be done, but now you're seeing teams that are less willing to make trades and more apt to do free agents, right, only in that what they want to add and not give up any of the young players. That's really what's changed a lot. No one wants to trade young players anymore.
So what does that mean for a team like the Blue Jays that, you're right, doesn't want to trade their young players, doesn't have an awful lot of marketable players beyond young players, and realistically can't. It's not going to be fishing in the deep the deep waters of the elite free agent market. How does a team like the Blue Jays proceed then? Coupling that with the fact, David, that there may be teams they want to deal with that are saying, well, just hang on for a minute. We gotta let the Anthony Rendon or the Garrett Cole thing play out or somebody else. How should the Jays proceed here?
So one thing that we covered, and I'm glad you brought it up again, because I'll die on the sword talking about this with the Blue Jays. They've got to decide who they want to go to bed with in right. their future out of all their great young players. That's where you find out if Shapiro knows what he's doing, right? If you choose the right guys to hang on to and the right guys to trade. But they should be trading some of their young position players because they need pitching. And they can say they've got some young pitching that's in the minor leagues that's coming, but I think they need ready-to-go big league pitching because the key is while Biggio is a 0-3, meaning while he's making the minimum amount of money, while Guerrero's making the minimum amount of money, if that's the decision they go with, to stay with those two, you've got to match them with pitching, and it will be expensive because you need that to win before these guys get too expensive, the position players, I mean.
David, do you think, in speaking of the Blue Jays, do you think the Jake Odorizzi level is realistic for them, Zach Wheeler, or, you know, my sort of, I wouldn't say worry, but my thought is that they're going to try to go a little bit lower than that, and then, you know, you're looking at middling starting pitchers in the American League East.
But this is exactly where you've got to, your baseball people need to be good. It doesn't take a good baseball person to sign Garrett Cole, right? You don't need to be a good scout. You don't need to be a good GM or a good owner. If you're willing to spend the money, you're getting Garrett Cole. If you give them the extra 2 years, people forget about it. They're so happy that you had them for a year or two. The good baseball people sign the Anibal Sanchez's, who can be a fourth starter and give you 160 innings, and they sign him for $8 or $9 million. They find, you know, Jake Odorizzi is not an example because he's someone who's a free agent who's going to be, you know, probably too expensive. But you identify a pitcher that we're not thinking about as non-baseball people. So you go to your owner and say, listen, I've got an idea to sign this free agent to a Miles Mikolas is someone, right, who comes from out of nowhere overseas. And he comes and becomes an important part of the St. Louis rotation. That's where the Blue Jays have to fish. And they have to differentiate themselves by being better at their jobs than the Yankees and Red Sox, because that's their only hope of competing.
Good stuff as always, David. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson's podcast. And he's also MLB analyst for CBS Sports HQ. You can follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, that was David interesting, B. that Sampson. Last part.
We've talked about that in the past, and it is true. You do it, you know. You do at some point have to make a call on this. Ben Nicholson-Smith and Shai Davidi are at the general managers' meetings. Either Ben or Shai, I think it was Ben, tweeted out yesterday something that almost made me puke. that the Toronto Blue Jays are considering giving Lourdes Gurriel Jr. more reps in the infield again, and I wanted to scream.
Why? That makes no sense. What position? First?
Second. I don't know if that's just, you know, position. I don't know. I don't know what. And I'm not doubting Ben's. I'm certainly not doubting Ben's reporting. But God almighty.
What's the thought process behind that? To free
you
up?
Know, I think the idea is.
To free up an outfield spot?
Well, they're looking, you know. Obviously, look, this team, ideally, in addition to pitching, this team needs a couple of legit major league hitters. And I guess maybe the thinking is you kind of get the hitters where you can, and if you have to move, I mean, let's say you get Marcelo Ozuna, he can only play left field, so you got to do something with Lourdes Gurriel.
You just solved this guy.
Exactly.
You did an amazing developmental thing.
Exactly.
You got him comfortable in the outfield.
Exactly. You read the situation properly. I mean, my biggest concern about the Blue Jays this offseason isn't that they're not going to sign a free agent or they're not going to do, you know, that they're not going to be able to get a free agent pitcher or anything. My situation is that we're going to get into, or my concern is that we're going to get into situation of musical chairs and we're going to end up with something like that with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. playing in the infield. I don't want that. Leave him in the outfield. He's fine. His arm, left field is one place where his arm actually becomes a bit of a weapon. So,
yeah. Well, I think
we'll try to get Ben or Shai on in the next couple of days and talking about that. I just thought about that when David was talking about you got to pick your the minor leaguer, the prospect that you're going to, you know, go to bed with and sign that guy to a long-term contract, much as the Padres are talking about perhaps signing Fernando Tatis Jr. to an extension. And then once you've done that, you make a decision on some of the other young players and move off. But we'll deal with that when we come back. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, well, bad news for MLS fans. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is leaving.
It's gone. Unexpected.
Great tweet. I came, I saw, I conquered. Thank you, LA Galaxy, for making me feel alive again. To the Galaxy fans, you wanted Zlatan. I gave you Zlatan. You are welcome. The story continues. Now go back to watch baseball.
He
that is the best thing ever.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic has scored some of the most beautiful soccer goals one can ever imagine.
Who cares about that? He's the best wing nut on the planet.
He's good.
I would
he's
vote
good
for Zlatan.
For what?
Anything.
Any office.
I would.
He's great though. If you're a soccer fan, you already know this, but just go like watch some of the guy's greatest goals on YouTube. They're just incredible. Such a great goal.
His commercials are good too.
Yeah, he's
actually the Zlatan documentary. I know you're a fan of documentaries.
I did not see that.
It's really good when you learn about his background.
Yeah. Showtime's got a good one coming up on Sonny Liston.
Really?
Yeah, it's interesting. Showtime up here in Canada? I think so. I think you can get it if it's on
PTV. No, you can't get Showtime.
Somebody says no.
I'm sure.
That's a bummer. All right, anyway, if you can get it somewhere else or pirate it, it's really good.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, that's just it. Dice just said pirating. I'm out of here. Enjoy it. Thanks for coming.
Probably should not say that.
Why would you do that?
I know. Management's going to really get mad.
See, now your stream of consciousness is getting in trouble.
Us. Anyway, it's really good.
God.
Go travel to the States to watch it. How about that?
Brunt never does that.
Where is Brunt these days?
I think he's...
Is he around here?
No, my God, there's fish biting.
Fish
stuff.
Biting? He's back next week, though. Yeah, it's exciting.
Anyhow. No, he's not in Belize. I know where he is, but I'm...
Parts unknown, as they used to say
I'm not at any liberty to divulge that.
I like it. Story time.
That situation. Mr. Deitch, that was relatively fun today.
Yeah, good
Thank
show.
You for your stream of consciousness.
Thanks to everybody behind the glass.
And, that was interesting. It was interesting.
Go for some donuts next time you're in Portland.
Wanted to see what you were going to say. That's what I'm going to do from now on when I'm bored. I'm just going to stop talking and let you fill the airtime.
I'll fill the airtime.
All right. Don't forget, Tim and Sid are next. Leafs and Islanders tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Leafs Nation. Spit it out, Jeff. Post game right after the final horn. Good night. We'll be back tomorrow.